transit?
Yes.
Done, and you know what happened? 12 o'clock, oh, you got one in the 12, oh, you got one in 12:15.
Good evening, everyone. And welcome to this joint interim committee on transportation preservation and modernization this fine evening of December the 13th. It's appropriate that we may have some weather coming in, and transportation may be an issue for all of us tomorrow.
Yes.
So we're waiting for an update from ODOT, Mr. Mather, so please let us know as soon as we need to begin to exit the building.
Does he have control over the weather?
Well, if he did, he screwed up Hood River last week.
All kidding aside, we appreciate you all being here. We know that this is an issue that is important to a great many people, and we appreciate the testimony that's coming tonight to begin to set us down a path to pass a transportation package. I'd like to take a moment and introduce staff who will be assisting us as we move through this process. Victor Dodier is here with us, and will be with us on this journey as our information wrangler in support of us as we put the package together. So, Victor, thank you for your willingness to participate in this this process. And he brings a great deal of expertise, and we're delighted to have him with us on staff.
That is in addition to Patrick.
In addition to Patrick, of course. Patrick, our esteemed committee administrator. I guess what this tells you is we are in very good hands as we move through this process. Now, the first thing that we have on our agenda tonight is an opportunity for each of our committee members, should they choose to just let us start out with a conversation about what they learned as we traveled to 11 different sites around the state and met with the local area commissions on transportation. We had two-hour hearings and met with committee members. We met with local elected officials. We did tours of important projects that have been done and drew attention to things that probably should be done at some point in the future. So I think I'll start over to my right and give Representative Olson a chance to tee us up and let us know kind of what you gleaned from our road trip.
Okay, thanks, Madam Chair and fellow committee members. I think actually what I'm going to do, if you don't mind, is, yeah, I do want to kind of share a little bit of my perspective as we travel around the state, but also some of the things that I heard that I really am interested in seeing us look at as we move closer into this, to kind of highlight that issue. Do you want me to stop right now and let Representative Smith-Warner go ahead?
I think
she is a...
If you would begin, we'll give her a chance to get settled in.
Well.
How'd you take my spot?
I'm sorry. This is what we always had to deal with, you know, when we were sitting next to each other all the time.
I'm standing.
Okay.
You have your work cut out for you, Madam Co-Chair.
I do. You know, it was really interesting, I thought, because when we were over at Ontario, we asked those folks over there, what did they want? I know we've had this conversation, but I thought it was interesting because a lot of the leaders on that side of the mountains wanted to see a 10% or a 10-cent increase in gas, along with other things. Then when we got down to U of O in Eugene, we heard as high as 25 cents. I had one of my city council guys out of Albany, our last meeting down at Lynn Benton Community College, go as high as 50 cents. So you really saw kind of a major disparity going across the state, and that type of thing is what I heard. So some things that I picked up on was the need for accountability and a perceived value from the voters that whatever we propose here, that the voters have really got to feel like they're getting the best bang for the buck. I think that was extremely important of what I heard everywhere we went. But I honestly, you know, you don't want to have this get jammed back down your throat, I don't think, you know, Madam Chair. I believe that we don't want to do an artificially increase the cost of things as well. And I'll explain that a little bit with the practical practical regulation is what I'll call it. And that's things that interfere with projects that ODOT may be involved in. Now, I'll give you a couple examples. One is Goal 18. We heard this from a number of county commissioners when we were over on the coast, especially out of Newport, but their concerns with what was happening that dealt with beaches and dunes. The administrative rules, the 19 administrative rules that DLCD has created, especially Goal 18, applies to this whole thing. An example would be Beverly Beach. I don't know how many of you have traveled up and down Highway 101 there in that area, but you constantly see sinking, sliding, erosion occurring on the highway itself. ODOT has to follow within the guidelines of what Goal 18 is and fill it up with asphalt all the time. It continues to be a hole. I'm saying let's get past that regulation that's an administrative rule with this committee, make something simple, give ODOT the authority to fix it from what they see is the best thing to do on a permanent fix and quit having to respond to the incident. That's all I'm suggesting right now. That's also what I heard from a couple county commissioners. Another issue involves, and we didn't hear this, but this is one that bothers me to no end because I've heard it several different times. When ODOT is involved with construction sites, and they might not be following the regulations to a T, they end up getting fined by DEQ as a result. This doesn't make sense to me. The last 5 years, they've received $72,000 worth of fines. I mean, I believe the agency itself, ODOT, wants to stay within the regulations that are there and to follow those. But there's got to be some other means of sanctions involved in moving forward with this and for compliance, because to me it doesn't make sense when you use $72,000. We're talking about using taxpayer dollars. So, and the other one, it doesn't have any tie with where we're going, but it was another issue that was heard across the state, and that was hiring more troopers. So, I mean, that's kind of passionate on my part, on wanting to have more troopers out there on the road. I get that. But it applies to the three E's, and we didn't hear a whole lot of that, but it's out there. And the folks from ODOT understand that, the engineering, enforcement, and education piece. But you got to have the enforcement side of it, too, as well. So somehow I get the whole idea of where we're at because of the Constitution and everything. We've got to consider, too, something to help put more troopers out on the road.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I would just briefly say I found the tour very educational as someone who has not been on a transportation committee before. I think you cannot overstate the importance of all of us at this dais having that face-to-face, seeing those communities, looking at past projects, looking at future options, and hearing from those folks all over the state and really getting that input, because it really gave us such a good, strong sense of the need and the desire all across the state. And my couple of highlights I would mention, just to echo, I feel like reinforced a lot of the governor's visioning work, that Portland congestion is an issue all across the state, not just in Portland proper. It does have a huge impact on businesses, on all sorts of stuff all over the state. And transit is a priority in every corner of the state. It is not just a Portland area or Eugene. Every community, large and small, talked about transit, prioritized transit, and realized, because maybe it's senior transportation, maybe it's workforce transportation, transit was a huge priority in every one of those communities. And I believe there is, and so I would say also that folks, really there's a great appetite for doing this, for a broad range of funding solutions, and I think we got the encouragement to be as creative as possible, to be as broad as possible, and to really look across the whole spectrum and know you're never going to pave your way out of congestion. And that is the other reason why I think that transit needs to be a big part of this overall, so that we are dealing with those environmental impacts of that, of our continued growth. So the more we can do to have this be multifaceted as well as multimodal, I think is going to be critical in its success.
Thank you. Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm going to just continue some of the themes that we've already heard something about real quickly, and then I'll go to some that are a little bit new from the last two speakers. First of all, I would agree with Representative Warner that transit was named from Hermiston to Medford. Transit meant different things to different communities, but what they said is we have people who cannot drive or should not drive or have no way to get from one spot to another, whether it be a hospital visit, whether it's getting to the shopping mall, and we need to figure out how to get folks there. So I did really see that in all corners of the state. Secondly, something that was already mentioned, and that was the size of the package. The size of the package was the thing that I heard over and over again was go big or go home. And what I heard over and over again was we're talking about maintenance and modernization. And we're talking about a package that should either be indexed or at least in some way has a continuous source of funds to go forward, because otherwise we get gaps in our finances for our infrastructure in the state of Oregon. So those were things that I heard on a very consistent basis. Another one that I heard was on safe pathways to school or safe routes to school. The fact that there were folks that could walk, should walk, it would be helpful if they walked. It provides part of that balanced system, and that we need to figure out how to create safer community walkways or sidewalks or ways for students to get to school, whether it happens to be elementary, high school, or even our community colleges. And they also talked about, you know, transit passes and things of that nature. They went on to talk about, besides indexing, the fact that we should absolutely have all tools on the table. The gas tax is not going to do it by itself. The gas tax is not going to do it in the future. And there are a lot of other things that we need to be looking at for resources and tools for funding our infrastructure of all sorts. They went on to talk about the fact that they wanted a balanced system. That means they really want to talk about walking, biking, the roads, the transit. They want a balanced system. And that balanced system should be more of a system conversation versus a project conversation, because we should be looking at an overall systems goal. And so that was something that I thought was pretty potent in what I heard. The other element that I thought was important, and that was basically on the issue of accountability, because I think accountability is always important. And I heard the accountability conversation a little bit different than my fine friend here, Representative Olson. I heard it as we have to use our resources well. I don't care if it's ODOT. I don't care if it's a county. I don't care if it's a city. I don't care if it's the, you know, the formula that we're using, but we need to understand we have limited resources, and we need to all use those resources well. And so that was the conversation that I heard. Overall, I heard the desire to have a package. And I think that is the most exciting piece of news, and that is no matter who we talk to, they wanted us to have something that's going to build and maintain infrastructure in the state of Oregon at a fine level of service. And so that's what I heard, Madam Chair.
Pretty good.
Thank you, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm going to keep my comments very brief because I anticipate the Senate's going to need a couple hours to share their thoughts on the day.
Go. We have about 15 minutes.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to warn folks. First of all, I want to thank the co-chairs for handling the process the way you have. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. We had a chance to travel around the entire state of Oregon, all the way from Ontario to the coast, down to Medford, Portland. I had a chance to look at port authorities, and so I greatly appreciate that. One of the takeaways I came away with is in my region, my ODOT region, Matt, Director Garrett, you're doing a great job. And I think folks in Eastern Oregon appreciate the good work of ODOT and the hardworking women and men that are showing up every day to make sure our roads are safe and efficient and productive. So thank you. I guess there was a representative who became a senator, who became a state treasurer, who had the phrase of keep your powder dry. And so what I would just share with folks is I represent a district that has five port authorities, has Interstate 84, Interstate 82, the Union Pacific Main Line, and the Columbia River, along with several regional airports. And so obviously this package is very, very important to me. I can share with all of you in here, my vote will not be swayed by a caucus position. It will not be swayed by any one industry position. It will not be swayed by any governmental position. My vote's going to be based upon what I think is the best package for the state of Oregon, and I stand ready to be a partner in making that happen. And so I look forward to working to figure out what that means.
Thank you. Representative Lively.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So just a couple, three things to add. One of our first trips was to East Portland, and from my standpoint, that showed a lot of different things. But one of the things that reinforced for me this is the issue of orphan highways across this state and the impact they have. And it's not just East Portland. It's not just Lane County. It is across the state. And so I don't want us to lose track of that as we're talking about the transportation package and something we addressed. The next was safety. And again, East Portland was a great example of that. But we saw that throughout this state. Whether it's safety on the freeways or safety in communities where the state highway is involved and how we address that. Some of that may be it's safe routes, but there was this whole litany of things that had to do with safety, but this takes investment. I was impressed in all the areas we traveled to about the cooperation amongst all the different entities, because that hasn't historically necessarily been true, and I appreciate that. And it hasn't necessarily been true even with ODOT and some of those, but everywhere we went, we've made a lot of progress, I think, in that area, and that's encouraging if we're talking about investing new money in our transportation network. So that part of it, from my standpoint, encouraged us in the work that we're doing. So overall, I appreciate all the efforts, all the chances to meet and to look at all those different regions. I think we learned something different in every region. I understand the breadth of this issue and the modes and all of those things we have to address to, and I just look forward to getting to work and figuring this out.
Thank you. Vice Chair Benz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Well, one thing we've been successful in doing is creating really high expectations. And I heard those growing as we did our 11-stop tour. And so I think what I was really hearing people saying, because I went back to my district and had a series of meetings in front of various county commissions, I have five of them, and other folks, I heard them saying, Representative Benz, we expect you to get this done now that you've been telling us you're gonna. And they don't... It's not up to me to ask them how to do it. They expect me to figure it out. And so they were really saying, what's it going to take, Representative Benz, to actually get something passed? And the answer, of course, is that's not the entire question. The real question is, what's it going to take to get it passed and then keep it from being referred?
Yes.
And so when we look at ourselves up here, all 14 of us, we have to ask who should be at the table as we negotiate this most interesting opportunity. And the answer is going to be anybody that can refer it, but also everybody else that we heard. What did we hear a lot? I just want to say that we have a really, really challenging path in front of us. And having gone through it several times before, I recognize just how challenging it is. And I would suggest we face a major problem right now, because I don't think we're together on our goals. I think we all have a bunch of ideas, but we haven't really sat down and shared what it is we're really trying to get done. Well, I'll share a couple of mine. One of them is we do need to do, as the governor said, something about seismic. We do need to do something about congestion. We have to do something about freight. Safety, of course. We heard all about that. We have to understand the nature of the complex system we're dealing with, and that is we need to build on the plans that have already been generated by so many good, hardworking people like the Oregon Transportation Commission. And then we have to know one thing really, really, really well. This probably gives me the greatest pause when I think about whether or not we're going to be successful, and that is we have to protect the price of fuel. Because when it comes right down to it, the people in my district are going to go, how much is it going to cost me, Representative Vance, for all these grand schemes you're busy putting together? And they're not going to ignore other pricing pressures, such as the low carbon fuel standard and such as the cap and trade bill we heard about 2 hours ago. And they're going to add those numbers up, and they're going to say, and you want to tack more on. And we can pretend it's not there on the table, but anything that goes to the price of fuel is going to be a challenge in this group. Now, we need to address it. If we're going to say it's separate, great. Let's say it's separate, but somehow we're going to have to then figure out how to keep it from being referred. And I heard that in my district repeatedly in the meetings I've just finished. They want us to go get the money, but they don't want to have to pay three times. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair. I think we'll start with Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I think we're at a point where we need to stop describing the problem and actually get down to doing the work. We have done this tour. I look out over this group of usual suspects, and it's the same conversation over and over again. We need to actually start putting the package together. And I have spoken to Co-Chair Beyer a number of times about how we're going to do this, whether or not we're going to be negotiating as a committee of the whole, or whether there are going to be straw men created that then the committee reacts to or the OTC reacts to. I don't know who's going to do that work, and I remain confused about that, and I'm asked repeatedly about when do we actually see a package that can start to be shopped and reacted to. And so I'm concerned about that. I agree with the comments that transit was heard in all of the stops. I would submit that there are two transits. There's big transit and there's little transit. And I think we have to squeeze the efficiencies out of both of them. And I think with little transit particularly, we've got to figure out how can we maximize connectivity. We use the same structure that seems to be tradition unhampered by progress, and we may not be able to continue that structure into the future. I would agree with whoever said we have driven expectations through the ceiling. Every community that we stopped in had their list and their parade of horribles, the projects that they think need to be funded. We were told in some cases that if a certain project is not done to 100%, we have failed. And if the expectation is that each of the projects, that some of them are long segments, need to be completed to boulevard standards, trees, sidewalks, safe routes to school, there won't be any money left for any place else. It is my opinion that until we get to work, we continue to drag out the process, and it is ossifying some of the opinions about flexibility in approaching what a project would look like. If the rigidity in negotiating positions is setting in now, I think we're going to be in trouble. Taking a page out of Representative Bence's book, I went home and talked with folks, and it is interesting how the conversation about go big or go home, when they're queried about whether or not resolutions would be passed in support of that, whether county commissions or municipal government would stand in solidarity with a package that was X amount of fuel, or the support gets a little squishier. And so I think that's one last comment I would make, is that for some segments looking at this transportation package, it's pretty easy to spend other people's money, and that we've got to get realistic about who the payors are and where the squeal point is for some of those payors. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator.
I could just say ditto to what Senator Johnson said and skip okay. a bunch, but I'm going to say a few things. I concur that the want list is way more than we could possibly ever achieve. And I'm not saying it's wrong to want all that, but we just can't possibly get there. The number of people that are stepping up to the plate that want to pay for it is fairly minimal. And let me give you an example. Everyone talked about mass transit and how mass transit's important. I'd be the first to concur mass transit is very important. But ridership in some areas was paying as low as 15% of the fares, 25% in Portland. That's just not acceptable. I'm sorry, you have millennials coming down the road that aren't going to want cars and want mass transit. They should be paying more. And so the question of who pays is going to be the fundamental question, and how we're going to put the package together. Bike riders. I don't know how many of us heard all the different things that bike riders want, I did not hear on this tour one person that was a bike rider say that they want to be taxed. Not one. Electric cars. I didn't hear anybody talking about increased registration fees. The tax. Everyone knows that the tax over the long haul, we're going to be going away from gas-guzzling cars. I live out in the country. I happen to drive a gas-guzzling car, but it's going to be a rather short period of time, and you have automatic drive cars, and that's going to change things dramatically as well. We also have Portland that has a whole host of problems that needs a ton of money. So any solution is going to have a separate tax just for that region, if that's going to work. Because it's not up to the whole state to pay for the problem that exists in Portland. Now, one thing that I'd like to point out that I thought was very interesting, how to get rid of congestion, was in Representative Olson's district, was the multimodal prospects along I-5. I thought that was extremely interesting. But again, to reiterate what Representative Bent said, it's going to come down to the price of fuel. If we go way too high, it's going to get referred and we're going to get zip. So, and you got to add, if you're ethanol subsidies into whatever we're going to be adding to as far as a gas tax. And to be honest, I think that at least this legislator, it's really important that we remove ethanol subsidies from the table. I just think that that, or not from the table, but that has to be deleted from the statutes. Because my fear is, if we leave it and it's watered down with administrative rule, that can be brought back as whole as it was to start with. So there are some problems for a conservative rural legislator to come up with a package, and that it's going to boil down to dollars and cents. But believe it or not, after telling you all that, I do want a package. I believe in infrastructure. And I think we could get there, but it's going to take give on both sides. And the ruling party is going to have to give some.
I've been saying for years that Oregon is one state. Oregon is not rural Oregon and urban Oregon. Oregon is one state. And that's what I heard traveling around the state. Everybody basically said, you got a major problem with transportation. Please fix it, and by the way, make sure it's big enough. And also make sure it's balanced. Make sure it includes all of the modes of transportation, and particularly as our electorate is getting older, and I can relate to that, transit becomes more and more critical, not just in Portland, where I live, but all across the state, in every community of the state, that it becomes increasingly important. I have concluded that the package must be balanced, must be big, and must be non-referable. And I think that's critical. You know, the voters out there are saying, you know, we elected you to do it, so do it. They're not saying, well, punt to us and we'll veto whatever you suggest. So I absolutely believe that this is a representative democracy and that I got elected to make these kinds of decisions in cooperation with my fellow senators and representatives in both parties. Must be balanced, must be bipartisan, must be bicameral, and it must be non-referable if we're going to make it happen, and we must make it happen. Now, there's some other things that have been suggested from time to time. Everybody looks at the distribution, 50, 30, 20. If we even hint at changing 50, 30, 20, we're crazy. Leave it alone. That has been an accepted formula. It's different than what other states do. But if we start tinkering with things like that, we will fail. Safety is also something that I've been working on for 40 years. Safety is critical. We have half the many state troopers that we had 30 years ago, and yet local law enforcement, especially in Southern Oregon, is greatly diminished. Half a penny on a bottle of beer will buy you a lot of state troopers if it's dedicated to that purpose. That's what I support. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Winters.
Thank you. I'm new to transportation, and in traveling around, I heard consistently throughout the region several things. One, maintenance and preservation, we've allowed our systems to crumble. and that's from county to county to city, whether we're talking potholes or transit or whatever. I've heard the need for seismic. I heard across, if you're looking at from Portland down I-5, you're talking congestion. I've heard the need to have a better way of moving people and goods, whether you're talking transit or freight. I've heard that we need to have a better vision, a vision that is beyond just talking about potholes and dealing with the congestion in the Portland area. I heard that if we really want to get serious, that what we come up with a package that is both short-term and long-range, that you actually, in Oregon, if we don't get serious about a transportation package, what I heard is that our economic viability is also at stake. Those of us in the valley looking at how we're going to get our nursery stock and other stock to where we're being competitive internationally and across this country has a stake in what happens and how the packages are put together. So I also heard, and I was very pleased, because one of the first stops that we made was at Woodburn. And at Woodburn, that was a successful project. Because one of the things they told us is that the community was engaged and involved. Yeah. So I heard that accountability and engaging the community is very important. I would agree with Senator Johnson. I think it's about time we quit talking. It's not like this whole issue of putting a transportation package together. We had the Group of Eight. We've had others that have been involved previously. I think, the whole issue of whether we're doing low carbon cap and trade and all of those came into discussion even during that those times when we were in the building. But I do think it's time now. And like I said, I'm new to this committee. I'm new to transportation. But our general constituent out there are waiting for us to do something. And I heard that throughout the state. I'm waiting for you to do something. How that iteration takes form, it's our responsibility to do that. So those are the messages that I heard. You did hear transit, and truly there is a difference between if I'm talking transit to go from Madras to Bend, or I'm talking about transit in the metropolitan Portland area. But I think in the long and short of it, the message that I heard loud and clear, that this legislative body needs to do something.
Thank you, Senator. Vice Chair Boquist.
Well, Madam Co-Chair, so let me talk about what we didn't find out, because that wraps up to you two. What we didn't find out in the great venture into the rest of the state. What we didn't find out is, what is our long-term comprehensive transportation plan? We don't have an integrated plan for city, county, and state. And so therefore, we don't know whether it's going to take us 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or 30 years to fix the problem. That's what we don't know, which is what we have to solve here if we're going to come up with a plan, which is why we're sitting here this evening having this meeting, by the way. The second thing we don't know is, we don't know whether everybody wants to have skin in the game, and we don't know what all the funding mechanisms are that we're going to need to make an integrated plan, because the highway fund doesn't pay for it all. So that has to be resolved, and the question is who will support what funding levels, as was mentioned by members here, and what new funding sources and new ways to do it. The next thing we don't know is, as I said, the right size of the transportation plan is how big is big. Somebody's holding their powder dry down there, but we know that it's got to be a certain size. So what is the right number, and what are you, the public, willing to do? We heard, rightfully so, that referral is certainly a problem, which means who out there would refer it? Why would they refer it, and what must be in it or out of the plan to keep it from being referred? And one of the mechanisms, lastly, that keeps it from being referable is, what are the accountability standards that we, the state, are going to have, you, the cities, are going to have, and you, the counties, So, there we are, ma'am. We're ready to go.
Thank you, sir.
My turn?
My esteemed co-chair, yes.
Well, it was interesting. What surprised me is the message across the state was pretty much the same. I think the one thing we heard a lot of voiced in different ways was people were concerned about not losing what they've already paid for, maintaining the investment. And to me, that sort of good business is the first thing you got to make sure that you can maintain what you got. And one of the things that I think is not understood a lot on that, if you look at the department's paving program, their priority lists, what we probably wouldn't lose is the interstate system or 97, but what we would lose if we don't put more money over time is the rural roads that we heard a lot about out there just will go to gravel. And I think that's a concern, for particularly for the rural areas. One of the things that I heard pretty loudly when we were in some of the smaller towns around there, particularly in northeastern and southeastern Oregon, was a concern that the current funding formula doesn't make any sense or has limited value for the small cities. I think we need to address that. I think we need to find a way to maybe take a little more off the top and make sure that when a city can get their share, it's enough to at least pave a street or fix the potholes annually. And I think we can do that without causing major damage to the state highway system or the larger municipalities or counties in there. So there's a way to do that. And I know that AOC and LLC are working on proposals to deal with that now. And I've strongly encouraged them to do that. And so I'm looking forward to their strong recommendations on how to deal with that. The other thing that really surprised me is how strong the support for transit was throughout the state, everywhere we went. And as noted, there's a difference between the large transit systems in the municipalities and the smaller ones there. But what was consistent in a lot of places was a concern, whether it was in Bend or down in Medford, that the employers heard a lot from employers saying, we need transit to get our workers to the jobs. And largely that had to do, frankly, it tied in with the housing problems when we were in Bend and other places saying, we can't, my workers, I can't afford to pay them enough. I'm ad-libbing a bit here, but I think the message was, I can't or I'm unwilling to pay them enough to allow them to live close to work. And so we need to make sure we have a transit system that gets them to work. Very strong message in Bend around that. Very strong message in Southern Oregon. On the Eastern Oregon, and I'm thinking of the Pendleton area particularly, and on the coast, it was more of a concern about seniors and people with disabilities being able to get into where the doctors are, which tend to be in the valley. And I think Senator Johnson has spoken about that a lot, trying to figure out how do you connect that up better so that you don't have one transit system getting halfway there and then a mile gap before you can get on the second transit system. We ought to be able to do better than that. Safety. Senator Geltzer sort of strongly pointed it out to us when we were in our Albany hearing. I think we spent time going on Highway 34, seeing every single road where there's been a death. And that's, we heard the same kinds of things when we were down in Medford. We heard the same thing on 97 in Bend. Didn't hear it as much as Eastern Oregon. I guess the cows didn't get in the way as much. Although we've seen some really nice roads over there, Representative. No, I know a couple of them. So I think that's an issue there. And I think our dilemma, and I'll get down to the end, is I think we're going to hear from the OTC, the planning efforts, and the cities and counties on that. We need to figure out what is that vision. In my mind, we need to have a longer term where we can tell to the public, here's how long it's going to take us to get the roads back in whatever shape we think they ought to be in. And I suspect that varies depending on the type of road. And be able to then say, and from that point on, we'll be able to maintain them. That would be a nice goal. Whether that's 10 years, 15 years, or 20 years, I think we need to be able to tell the public that. Second thing, we need to address the accountability issue. I mean, that's really there. I know Representative Bence has some ideas about that, how to at least be visibly responsive, and I think that's one there. Funding-wise, it's really, you know, we heard a lot of, as Representative Olson said, we heard the, you know, everything from a dime to 50 cents. You know, the public really doesn't understand all the ways we do that, but that's sort of a sense of where we're at, trying to figure out what that means. What we didn't hear much about and we'll need to talk more about is we need to keep in mind that for the folks who move freight in the state, you know, when you talk about a dollar to the car driver, that's a dollar 30 to the trucker. And so we've got to be mindful of that cost disparity based on our constitutional cost responsibility system. So that's a big deal. We have to figure that out. How much can we afford to do and how do we need to do it? And I agree with Senator Girard. We need to get at some equity, the other funding sources. We need to seriously, if we're going to do transit, if we're going to do bike lanes and that sort of stuff, they need to have some skin in the game. I guess we've talked a lot about the bicycle thing. I guess the question there would be, we know we can't raise enough money to really be helpful. It's sort of a feel-good proposition. It's sort of, what can we do to get a contribution that doesn't cost us more to administer than we get in revenue? Yeah. And that's the tactic. And that's a touchy one with people. And there's always the argument out there on that. And we heard this, is that most bicycle riders also are car owners and drive cars too. So there's a sense of double payment. But that's a lot to wrestle with. I think, as Senator Johnson said, it's time to stop talking and start doing some planning and the process. The idea is that we need to start working that out as a committee. I will remind you that the direction we had from the leadership is that we're supposed to do this in the full light of day, not in the closed room. So, you know, that's the direction. We'll try to do that. It's a little different than we've done it in the past, but it's a way to try to do it. That's what I heard.
Thank you, Co-Chair Meyer.
Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
It was just mentioned, you know, very briefly about DEQ and DLCDC. And, you know, it was both in some prior work that was done that we can't separate, actually, if we're looking to the future, the whole issue of housing. And we just touched briefly when we go out and we heard some of that discussion and those locations in Hartway. And so at some point, I think, I think we were in Tigard and that area where that came into play, where some of the DLCDC regs were interfering with where you're placing highways. And, you know, too often we operate in isolation. And I think at some point, you know, as we look at communities, and communities have raised this issue, that it's an issue that actually we're going to have to address sometime in the future.
Thank you very much, Senator.
We're not going to address that.
But I'm just saying it's there.
Well, as you can see from this basically 45-minute exercise, that we have our work cut out for us as a committee. You've heard the same things that we have heard. A number of you have participated. We have stakeholders of all shapes, sizes, and geographic distribution. We have issues of preservation and modernization. We have issues of seismic. We have transit. We have bike ped. We haven't talked a lot about freight so far in this group. I suggest that we have some significant issues in how we deal with intermodal investments with airports and rail and ports. We need a stable source of funding. Connect Oregon is a wonderful program that hasn't come up tonight. It's underfunded right now, so we have a lack of adequate investment in our intermodal infrastructure. You've heard that transit is critical on all fronts. We heard it everywhere in the state, from the communities largest to small. And the other thing you heard is it's time to begin. This is a connected system. I think we have to look at it as a statewide intermodal system that the investment has been made in over the decades, and it's incumbent upon us to send it off to our next generation in good stead, and we're not doing that. We must do that. And we have our work cut out for us.
And to Senator Johnson's point, yes, it is time for us to begin, and we will begin tonight in a bit of a new way of doing business and inviting the Oregon Transportation Commission to come to present to us, not in a room with eight people, but in a very public setting. And then we will invite up comments from the Oregon Transportation Forum, which has a very diverse group of stakeholders that we are looking very much forward to hearing from on what issues they think rise to the top as priorities. We're looking forward to hearing ideas as to how revenue may be raised to fund some of these things that can't be paid for by a highway tax. I think we are all very open-minded up here in trying to find a way to thread this very careful needle that we're going to have to do to make this package successful, but it's going to start here tonight with the comments that you've heard and with now the OTC and the Transportation Forum coming forward, and then we want to hear from the AOC and LOC on what they have gleaned from the information that they have brought from force from their members so far, and then this process will begin. So on that note, I would like to call up Commissioner Bainey and Commissioner O'Halloran to talk to us about what you did in your workshop and the last few weeks and what you think we need to be considering as we put this package together.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to be before you this evening. My name is Tammy Bainey, and I am the chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission. I also am a Deschutes County Commissioner in my 10th year, and I am co-chair or former co-chair of the Governor's Transportation Visioning Panel. Very similar themes, as were mentioned, going around the room today. Listening about the challenges that Oregon has right now in terms of being able to invest in our infrastructure. Certainly the themes of protecting the asset that we have today and making sure that we can maintain the system as we have. Addressing congestion, safety, seismic, and transit. And I appreciate the distinction between large and small in terms of what those needs are. The OTC, as you know, is charged with the oversight of our state's transportation system, and we take that very seriously. We base our policy decisions and resource allocations on the state's long-range transportation plan that the commission has developed. Within that plan are the specific modal plans and the investment strategy that we are presenting, which I hope you each have a copy of as well, essentially is a distillation of those current strategic policy plans, and that's integrated with the collaborative work that going around the state, meeting with various groups, of course, the work with the Governor's Transportation Visioning Panel, meeting with ACTS, MPOs, and et cetera, with our stakeholders. We do share your commitment to accountability. We do know that that is the only way that the state of Oregon is going to pass a transportation package. Fiscal responsibility, contracting practices, ensuring that project delivery meets Oregonians' needs, those are all important pieces for us. We are appreciative of your commitment to securing a funding package. Our competitiveness in the state of Oregon, quite frankly, is at stake. The safety of our communities is at stake in terms of the Cascadia, and our economic vitality, as you've mentioned, Senator Winters, is certainly something that we are in need of shoring up. So the basic strategies of the basics of the strategy, a side note is that this is a draft. The reason for that is because is twofold. One, we want to make sure that this is useful and it has the information in it that you need. So this is an iterative process tonight. We hope that we can get from you also what it is that you'd like us to shore up or add to this document. Second to that, this has not gone before the Transportation Commission at this point. We meet on Thursday, so it's just a bit of an awkward hop in terms of the strategy. My colleagues have had a chance to review it, and so I don't foresee any challenges there, but just wanted to make sure that's why you know that it's a draft. The strategy that you have in front of you is strongly multimodal, and that is because Oregon's needs are multimodal, as have been mentioned this evening, consistent with our policy orientation of the commission, which is that we are a multimodal agency. It looks to leverage investments across all modes to improve mobility, safety, provide economic opportunity, and create livable communities. As we will discuss on page 2 in the document, it follows an investment strategy.
Chair,
oh, yes, please.
Madam Chair, you're assuming we have it in front of us and we don't.
Oh, no.
It's on OLIS.
Okay.
Some of us don't have the electronics with us.
Okay. Some of us arrive without computers, and so it's on OLIS is what you're talking about.
Okay, not a problem. I have a sock puppet, and we'll go through. Okay, so that's, thank you,
We will
Madam
make sure that the committee receives the full copy, either in hard copy or they can look it up when they get home. Is everybody all right with that?
Okay, great. All right. Thank you.
Yes, we. Coach Urmeyer.
It was just posted. This is, we've been making sure that we've been refining it to make sure that it's something that we are comfortable with as the OTC, and then also that it meets your needs. So we will try not to refer then to page numbers that you don't have in front of you.
But it Thank does, you very much.
Yes, absolutely. So the strategy is. Laid out many years ago that we adhere to a policy for the statewide transportation improvement plan. And so first in that is the preservation of the existing system. And currently with our STIP, which is the statewide transportation improvement plan, 85% of those funds are going to preserve and maintain the system, and 15% roughly in numbers is going to enhance, essentially. So of those priorities, first is preserving the existing system, making it safe. Second, make the system as efficient as possible through technology, investments in transportation options, and incremental improvements that improve and provide a return on investment. Finally, when these strategies aren't adequate, our priority is to address a major problem by looking at expanding the capacity of the system. So that is not where we go first, knowing that we want to be able to use technology and other opportunities. This strategy is both fiscally responsible in an era of limited funding and funds, as you know, in response to the priorities of Oregonians, who, of course, consistently rate maintenance and preservation, as you heard going around the state, as our top transportation priority. The needs of our state and the needs of our system are immense. There simply isn't enough money to meet all of the needs, and maintaining the system and services that we have today. As a result, we are forced to prioritize, of which this investment strategy is just that. For state highways, the strategy focuses on a set of priority corridors that carry high volumes of traffic, connect our communities, and move most of the state's freight. These are designated freight corridors, seismic lifeline routes, and the highest priority for investment of resources, routes like I-5, I-84, US 97, 20, 30, or and Oregon 38. There is a map in the document as well where you can see those corridors. Given the magnitude of the need, and we simply cannot do it all, it is our responsibility as the Oregon Transportation Commission to ensure that these priority corridors remain viable for economic vitality. So the areas of investment, again, in the document of which you will have a chance to peruse at a later date, we focus the investment strategy on four areas, very similar to the areas that you heard going around the state. Preservation and maintenance. Currently, our spending, and these are in rough numbers, again, they will be outlined in the strategy that you have. $385 million is our current spend, and we are suggesting and recommending a $285 million additional funds. Managing congestion, making sure that we can get our goods.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Sorry, I'm not Madam Chair this time.
Well, this is a question for Madam Chair. Respectfully, for those of us that are trying to follow you, you're reading so rapidly, I'm having a hard time following it. You just said that your spend is 300 and something, and you're going to add an additional something to it. Where's the additional something coming from?
Senator Johnson, we're going to try and project this document so you should be able to see it in a minute. Well, it may be helpful, but we're going to try.
It also, I think, would be very helpful to have the commissioner's written testimony as part of the packet, if you don't mind.
Okay, that would be helpful.
But if you could help me, the money piece that you just said, I wasn't able to follow.
So current funding in what we yes, please. If you want.
So, Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's coming together. For the committee's sake, can we ask questions as we go, or would you prefer we hold our questions?
Okay, I will refer to Chair Bainey. Would you prefer questions as we go, or would you like to finish your presentation and then take questions?
What works best?
I love questions.
Okay.
Thank you. No, I don't have a question right now. I just want to know. But
he just wanted to muzzle me.
No, if you'd like, I can.
It didn't work, Madam Chair.
We can start talking budget questions on here.
Senator Johnson, I believe, did raise one question, though, and we will do our best to get this up.
Oh, here we go.
There we go.
We got it.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Travis.
And if we, Madam Co-Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to also introduce my colleague, Commissioner Sean O'Halloran.
Welcome, sir.
Way we can tag team as you'd like as well. We did have a bit of a presentation put together, but I think it works best if we are able to kind of answer a bit, too.
Perfectly fine, and please feel free to ask questions if the commissioner is all right with that procedure as well.
Madam Chair, could you move it to, I think you want to move it to the map. Yeah, it's hard to read.
I'm Sean O'Halloran, also a member of the Oregon Transportation Commission, and thank you for having us before you, and I'm looking forward to a discussion, but I think this is early in the stages, but more importantly, we're looking forward to working with you to get something done here.
You as well. Thank you, sir.
It's right here.
So let's go. We are going to go to the prioritized highway corridors. Is that where we are?
Right there.
Okay, great. So this is where we are prioritizing the investment of resources for routes to tackle things like safety, freight mobility, community connectedness, the seismic resiliency pieces, and that is the map that is in the document as well. Preservation and maintenance, if we could go to the numbers where we outlined some of the, maybe we go.
Chair Bainey, maybe we frame this up a little bit. Our current overall spending is about $1.3 billion.
Right.
And I think, and really, when you look at where we need to go, and I think we heard you loud and clear about the needs of Oregonians and our travels around the state, and transit does mean different things to different people, but what it means is they want to get around their communities without having to use their own vehicle, per se. And then we need to connect the communities together. People don't really care whether it's a state, a city, a county, a federal road. They want to get from point A to point B and be able to do it without hitting a pothole or spending a lot of time in traffic. We know the problems, and we live them. I think the solutions are a little more challenging. They're not partisan, and it's very expensive. And I think how we get there, Senator Monroe, to your point, I think it was really everything has to be on the table. You're not going to solve it on fuel taxes. I think you've got to look at vehicle registration, licensing, bonding. Literally everything has to be on the table because it's going to be a very expensive solution. I think we've been creative on weight distance. That's not going to solve the problem. There isn't a silver bullet. I think you've got to look at all sources and look at trying to get to that equity piece you're talking about, and trying to get skin in the game by all users and try to make it more user fee based. That's what we've tried to do, and I think in putting together a package for your consideration, we can go as big as we can afford. But I think clearly it's going to take a lot more investment to do what we need to do to just maintain what we have. So if we don't keep up with that level of investment and inflation continues, it will erode over time. So just to maintain the status quo is going to take more money. So, and then if we want to start looking at how we address congestion and transit and seismic needs and improve safety and create freight corridors and all of these things, it's going to take a higher level of investment. And that's what I think we want to frame that up as we look at an integrated system and all of the pieces to it. Sometimes it's not just the road, but the culverts around it and all the little bridges and guardrails and safety and signing and just everything that contributes into it. But I think all in all, it is critical to our economic vitality. It's critical to people getting to good health care and education and maintaining our livelihood and our quality of life. So I hear from it daily about people just don't like to spend time in traffic. They don't like potholes. They want to get around, and the catch there is no one wants to really pay for the fix. So it has to be spread out in other ways. Anyway, I wanted to frame it a little bit.
Thank you.
You asked, I think, and Senator Beyer, when you came before us, you said we want to see your design, and Representative Benz, and I think we've attempted to do that here. And we can do it in different buckets depending on what we can get to financially. So, and we could also frame it in terms of prioritizing needs of critical infrastructure, bridges, and also know that there is some efficiency as we address bridges and seismic and freight corridors, right? You get some benefit. You can do all three at once. Mm-hmm. So anyway, frame it up. Back to you, Chair Bain.
Thank you. Thank Commissioner. You. So all in, our recommendation in scenario one is roughly $574 million in terms of an increase annually.
So that moves from $1.3 billion to roughly $1.9 billion.
And we can work back from there. Madam Co-Chair, to Senator Johnson's question, how do we pay for that? Again, it's everything needs to be on the table. So we have laid out a strategy that has a scenario for highways, which includes bridges, culverts, maintenance, seismic, safety, all the way down to biking, pedestrian, public transit. We've categorized them, but all in, the recommended increase is $574 million.
Co-Chair Beyer. Yeah.
Is that number just on the state system, or is that take care of the other 50% local government funding?
That is the state system.
Okay, so it'd be $1 billion.
It would be.
A total package under the current formula.
Yes. I think it goes to $1.9 billion annually.
You know, Senator Johnson. Thank you. I came down here at the disadvantage that I had not read this document, so okay. I'm shooting a little bit in the dark.
Well, we all are.
But the question that I've got is you just stated that you priced, I think you characterized it as the minimum amount necessary at $500 million.
Correct.
Per year.
Additional. To move us in the direction of being able to preserve this, Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, in the way of being able to protect the investment, to be able to shore up the safety, to meet seismic, and also the economic needs of the state. Yes.
And I appreciate the work and I appreciate the effort, but it asks for me a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. You have priced that based on certain assumptions that I presume are ODOT assumptions. In terms of you, in order to price it, you had to look at certain projects, certain corridors, and those are deemed to be the corridors of highest priority in ODOT's opinion, the culverts that are the most dangerous in ODOT's opinion. And so I want to make sure that assumption is correct. And the second question I want to ask is that you've said, and I keep jumping around on the money, it's 572, what?
74.
That, I presume, is in new money in addition to what you've got now.
Correct.
And I don't know whether or not there has been any conversation about efficiencies that could be achieved in your current spending practices, or are there activities that ODOT currently engages in that could be dialed back, money repurposed? Perhaps I'm going back to the Gang of Eight conversations where there was the possibility that the legislature could arbitrarily reprioritize ODOT's work activities and their prioritization. And so I'm just trying to get a handle on if this becomes a foundational document to identify that this is an ODOT foundational document, and I don't know when we start, for lack of a better word, monkeying around with the road segments that you've picked, or we add or subtract arbitrarily, how much that changes the 574 and how much that creates a greater or lesser sense of problems, because instructed by what happened in 2009 and instructed by the conversations in the Gang of Eight, there was a lot of give and take over time. And so I'm wondering, are we supposed to accept this is the roadmap and you guys come up with the mix and match of how to pay for it? Or are we going to, Madam and Mr. Chair, create another roadmap that may reflect legislative priorities versus agency priorities? Or am I all haywire and I've missed the point here entirely?
Co-Chair Beyer.
If you don't mind, Co-Chair Byer has either.
Please.
I think what we have asked the commission to do is do their job. And you said the department. I'm saying the commission. So when you take action, which I understand you haven't but will tomorrow.
Thursday.
This then becomes the plan for the state. And then our question is, I think, as a legislature, is how much of it are we going to be able to fund? Mm-hmm. And in what way? And it's, I think what you were looking at in 2009, which in a way was easier, you weren't looking at preservation and maintenance, you were looking at projects. And the projects largely, while they were selected by legislators, and there was some give and take there, obviously, there always is, you're essentially taking projects that come up sort of organically from the local transportation acts and MPOs and what have you there. Those plans don't go down from the top. They come up from the bottom, and then they're accepted by the commission. So it's kind of that. It's harder when you're doing maintenance and that kind of thing.
Oh, I understand that, and I appreciate that. I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but this is a pretty important fork in the road for me. Mm-hmm. Because if the commission accepts this on Thursday, then this becomes the roadmap, and it is our job to just find the funding versus mm-hmm. us helping to describe the roadmap. And we have mm-hmm. basically surrendered the committee's ability to describe projects, and we are now being told, and I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but we're being told by the transportation professionals in our agency and our good Oregonians that serve on the commission, this is our plan, you go pay for it.
I would disagree with that, Madam Chair, if I will. I think what we're getting from them is that they're the people who do this daily. They're coming to us and saying, if it was up to us and we could do it, this is what we would recommend to you, legislature, to do. Okay. We have to step back away from that and saying, from the legislative perspective, what is it that we feel we can support? And it may be different than theirs. But you have to have a starting place. And, you know, the work that the local communities have done building up to the plan, it's probably a really good reflection of what people throughout Oregon who work in this day-to-day say the need is. That's kind of the corollary to what we heard.
I haven't quite beaten this to death, so give me one more shot. You have said two really important things that I want to drill down on. One of them, you said they have heard what the communities want, and to what degree this is a reflection of what was heard on the road trips would be important for me to know. And the other thing, and I ask this of the two presiding officers of this committee, and I ask this by extension out there in video land where I know other presiding officers and leadership are listening, how much are you going to tolerate the committee manipulating the recommendations on this set of proposals as far as pavement maintenance, culvert replacement, bridge? What's going to be the tolerance of the chairs and legislative leadership to say, I'd rather supplant ODOT's theory on doing culvert A with culvert B someplace else?
Co-Chair Byer wants to comment. Representative McLean has a comment, and then I will also finish up. So, Co-Chair Byer.
From my perspective, this is the legislature. We work things out. And I think to the extent that we come up with and get agreement that we need to do something different, make a change, that's reality. That's our job.
Representative McLean.
Well, I really appreciate the senator's comment. And what I have to say is I've got an agenda here of people that we invited to come in and tell us their thoughts. And I see the OTC as giving us their thoughts. And you are a special commission, and you have a definite mission that has been given to you. But this is a reflection of your thoughts, and it's also a reflection and a starting point for our conversation. And I have other folks that I'm going to listen to tonight. I've got the forum, and I've got AOC, and I've got LOC, and they're all going to have
perspectives and points of views and priorities. And so to the Senator Johnson, I think that the answer that I got and what I heard from both the agenda and from folks here is this is a starting point. This is where we listen to folks who have definite opinions, and it's a starting point. It's a reflection. And then we have to take all of their reflections, and then the committee has got to work that and try and figure out where the funding will come from. And, you know, we all know that it's conversation, compromise, and trying to figure out funding. But I don't think that I heard you say, and I would like to know if you said that to Senator Johnson or not, this is a reflection and a starting point. This is the conversation that we have to be a foundational basis to doing the work that this committee has to do.
And Chair Boehner and Senator Johnson, I think Representative McLean just very succinctly stole my thunder about what I was going to say. We've invited the OTC here. We've invited AOC and LOC. We have invited members of the Transportation Forum to start us off on a conversation. And to Co-Chair Byer's point, these are the experts. And so we've asked them to bring to us their thoughts, and that's what they have done, and I appreciate that because you've done it at our request, and we are very grateful for that. But this is the starting point of the conversation. We are the legislature. We're going to take the vision panel, the information we've gathered from the roadshow, the OTC's thoughts, the OTF's thoughts, and from that we will be building a straw man that will come sometime in January for you all to begin to work on. And this is going to be a process that's going to take
when
some time.
When you say, Madam Chair, we are going to be building, who's we?
Well, it will start out with Senator Byer and myself, the vice chairs. It will be presented at some time in January, and then we will all begin as a 14-member committee to bring all of our expertise, all of your thoughts, all of your priorities, along with what the people in the audience tonight are bringing, and we will work through a process to develop a bill. But this is going to take time. And I would appreciate people's patience as we work through this process. But this is the very beginning. This is the night that we start this. Thank you for your patience.
Yes.
And Vice Chair Benz.
Well, since Senator Johnson has raised a very important issue and you've commented upon it, do you want to debate the process now, or should we listen to these folks?
Get through the presentations of our guests here this evening.
Okay, but let me just say, we need to talk process really carefully. And I would be very unhappy, just so you know, if you two come back with a straw man without our input in helping design it. I just want you to know that right now, since the issue has been raised. And just now the record is clear, we can go on.
The record is very clear.
Can I just ask a technical question?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Senator Girard.
Thank you for being here. The question I have is in green. There's a lot of federal highways, and that's for existing funding. You have a president, which some people didn't like, but some people do, that says that he's going to invest heavily in infrastructure. Since those are federal highways, and they look like they're existing projects, can you explain the cost of those, and is there a possibility that cost might go down if the feds fork up a little extra money?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the spirited dialogue, and Senator Girard, to your question specifically, I think we are hopeful for investment in infrastructure from the federal government, and with the FAST Act, I think that's given us some opportunities as well to know where that might play into the current funding formulas. I don't know, but that is something that we certainly are tracking and are wanting to make sure that there's a place for us to help to offset those costs if possible. Commissioner O'Halloran, having his background in the federal, maybe your crystal ball in terms of thoughts that you might know. But we are hopeful and will continue to work with our federal partners to bring in all that we can.
My problem is on the map. If you look at the number of green freeways that are federal roads, which should be a federal responsibility, because gas tax, there's a federal take there. I'm just kind of curious as to why that's an existing project within ODOT. So, I mean, or your recommendation for ODOT. So maybe ODOT could answer the question, too. I'm just kind of scratching my head here because I think state money should go for state highways, but maybe I'm just old school here.
Well, we are very dependent on federal resources and what we invest in our state infrastructure, and much of it's distributed on a formula basis. So it's very much a partnership, but we get a lot from them in maintaining the system that we have in the state. So obviously, if there's additional resources, it allows us to do more. And I think Senator Johnson, to your point, I think. In our obligation to look at what should the policy for the state be, it takes into consideration all the different modes. And Senator Beyer, and when you spoke with us, it's to frame the vision. And we asked ODOT to categorize the condition of roads and bridges and what the need is and how they see it over the course of time deteriorating. And that would define where we need to invest at what point in time and how you can build a package over time to address the needs to maintain the system. They did that. They presented that to us. We then attempted to take the work that was done by the Transportation Vision panel as it represented all the geographic regions of the state, and it represented all modes of transportation, and trying to say where should we go and defining the needs. I think then in the input that we've had from traveling around the state from the area commissions on transportation, trying to cobble together what would be a framework for your consideration. Obviously, in coordination with the governor's office and with you, you guys are going to have the final say. And I think what we wanted to do was to give you a straw man. It can be molded and shaped depending on how you want to prioritize it. And I think we've heard the same thing from people around the state and what and where they want to invest. And I think the challenge is how do we get from where we are right now to meeting that need. But I think people are much more willing to write a bigger check if they know what the vision looks like down the road. No one wants to spend more money to fill the same pothole. And I think if you can look at what do we get for it, do we get less congestion, do we get better ability to get around our communities, are we better prepared for an earthquake, are we safer, and addressing these issues, I think people are more willing to write a bigger check. So our objective was to incorporate these various inputs from various stakeholders all around the state and to try to come up with a straw man. You guys are going to be able to chip away at it and build on it as you find resources, and but that was our objective, and I hope that helps frame it a little bit better, Senator Johnson. So I would focus less on the numbers because I think it's you can throw enormous numbers at these problems, and you'll be able to suck it up. Some of the things aren't going to go away overnight anyway. If you had $1 billion to spend on Portland congestion, it's still going to take you 5 to 10 years to address it. You have expensive right-of-way, you have environmental impact statements and regulation and a huge construction period to do it. So they're not quick overnight fixes, even if you had all the resources to do everything you want to do. So it's going to be molded and shaped based on the resources that we can put together. And I think what we want to do is have a plan, have a framework that can be tailored based on the resources we're able to produce here.
Thank you, sir.
We can define it that way.
Senator Boquist has a question.
Actually, I have more of a statement, so all the members know. I'm the one that got OTC into this mess. So the
Thank you, sir.
Second line in the statute says, first line says is OTC, which is why ODOT isn't up here. OTC is responsible, and we can hire and fire them. That's the first thing in the statute, which is why we said, let's not bring ODOT up here. Let's bring the commission up here. I witnessed a very interesting discussion. If you want to see it, it's on OTC's, the Transportation Commission's webpage. Because the second line in the statute says they're going to develop a long-term comprehensive master plan for transportation. We don't have one, okay? This is where we are right now in starting to say, this is long. This is the first time I've ever seen, what are we going to do in 0 to 10 years, 10 to 20 years, and more than 20 years? And most of us, they're in the legislature and the House, think that's 2 years to re-election and 4 years in the Senate. But what we're trying to do is say, okay, what is the, is it, and we asked this. I specifically asked, and there was quite a discussion between the two people here and less than desirable discussion from some of their other members, that okay, what is it going to take to make the system whole and how much money it's going to cost and what are the list of projects to do it? So here's my ask to the commission here. This is step one. Step two, which will answer many of the questions to my good colleague to my left down here, Senator Johnson, and that is the next step we really need to know, and I explained this previously at your guys' meeting, is that behind each one of these items, this 0 to 5 years or 10 years, is a list of projects and a time phase sequence that goes out this way. Any engineer or any college student that's a second year engineer knows how to do project planning. And what we need at the legislative level, Senator Johnson has made reference to this and others, is what makes up each of these parts now. If the short-term plan you're suggesting is 0 to 10 years, in 0, 1 to 5, what are the projects and everything that are in here? Are we spending on paving culverts, 25 culverts, 16 culverts? You guys all put this together to come up with a number. And so what we need is step two, so when we come back to this and start looking at it for Eastern Oregon or Northeastern Oregon is saying, okay, are these really the priorities we need for Northeastern Oregon to implement in the plan? Because that's where we're going to dabble around in here. But that long-term comprehensive plan, which is a statutory requirement, what we really need now is Annex A, Annex B of this document right here that tells us how are we going to get there in 0, 1 to 5. These are the projects, these are the maintenance upgrades, this is the preventive maintenance, this is the intermodal we need in the far side, so on and so forth. So you can give us some, you can call it a straw plan or whatever with it, but something across the board that says, okay, it's going to take 25 years to fix this, we don't like your priorities, we're going to change them around, these projects need to be first for best because we've heard this, so on and so forth. That is the ORS tasking for you guys. That's sort of what we kind of need to go forward so that we get into the weeds farther along, as Senator Johnson was saying down here, and good Representative Smith over there says, I mean, I'm willing to build an intermodal in his district because I'm trucking to his district right now just to get out of the bloody state. Right. So I get it. But we need to see those parts in Annex A, Annex B, Annex C, and exactly like I said at OTC, Travis or Paul and two engineers behind the scene know what this stuff is. You've got a computer program, and you can line out and fill this in as we go forward, at least till our next meeting. You know, it gives you, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
May I suggest that we, we're asked to provide questions as we go. I think unless there are any pertinent questions right now, we're going to allow the chair to finish her presentation.
And I was laughed at when I asked that question.
Thank you.
Experience.
Chair Maney, would you please proceed?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I do want to hit some of the questions that have come up because I think this actually is the presentation. A lot of the comments and questions and et cetera is what we're here for. So let me please go back to Senator Johnson. And I also want to underscore what Representative McLean mentioned. This is a starting point. This is a menu. So this is not, this is, we are to inform. That is our job in terms of, for the state of Oregon and the statewide system. So cities and counties, of course, will have their own issues that they're going to come forward with. But I don't want to miss the part that you mentioned, Senator Johnson, about efficiencies. Efficiencies go to the accountability, and I think that Oregonians expect us to be efficient and accountable to the needs. So that is something that we are looking at. We had actually, for a number of years, have been looking at projects that we just, that are on the shelf that just should not be, that we are, we know more now, we are more efficient now, we have better technology today. Those are things that we have as core principles at for the OTC that we are tracking. So in terms of, for Senator Boquist, I wanted to get to the, let's take bridges for instance. In the document, you will see this is a corridor plan. So this is going to be distilling it even further down. We do have, and the reason that we were able to come up with this document relatively quickly is we, through the Oregon Transportation Plan and our modal plans, that really is a strategy and the vision for 20 years in the state of Oregon as Senator, or as I just made you a senator. I'm so very sorry. sorry. to my friend, Commissioner O'Halloran, I mean that in just, we, through the Governor's Transportation Visioning Panel work as well, we were able to bring all of that together and come up with what corridors. We have not gone to the granular piece of looking at project specific. That was by design. We can get to that, but what we didn't want to do was bring a cherry, you know, a list for you to cherry pick in terms of the winners and losers. We needed to inform where the issues are. We needed to inform where the challenges are and what we believe as a Transportation Commission needs to be funded. So shall we go forward?
Sure. I just comment that I don't think we're very far from that. I mean, we've been able to, you know, we have asked ODOT to provide us with what is the need and what is the timeline. Which does get very project specific and very geographic in where is it? If a bridge is in structural deficiency, it's a kind of matter of fact, right? If it needs to be fixed. And I think so getting to that point, Senator Boquist, we are not very far from that. We've asked ODOT for that. They've provided it in various iterations. And I think getting it to a point where it could come to you in that form is not something that is going to take a lot of time. And I think there is clarity on the fact that the obligation statutorily for the commission is to set the policy, and it's to develop the plan, and it's to oversee the department. And I think all of this is to take those steps. And you talk about accountability. I think that as you do a package, we want to make sure that we're strengthening that muscle to assure that you're confident that you have the accountability that you're after in this process. And as we move forward, and surely if we're going to spend more money, we want a greater level of accountability and transparency and oversight in how we're doing that. And I think that we'll come to you and ask for that help statutorily as you move forward in a package. And I think that you guys should have confidence in the power you've given the commission to make these decisions.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair, would it be beneficial to walk just through the strategy?
I think
strategy
it would.
Piece?
And okay. Just to note, we are about 40 minutes behind right now.
Okay.
But this has been a very important, robust conversation. So I think, Chair Bainey, if you don't mind, go ahead through your presentation.
Okay.
I want to make sure that we have plenty of opportunity for our other presenters to get through their information as well. But just be on notice, we may be running a little bit late.
So, Madam Co-Chair, what I'd like to do is hit the high notes.
Thank
what
you.
We've laid out for you is a strategy that shows 0 to 10, 10 to 20, and then long term. So you will see in the investment strategy, we have a timeline in the front of the document. And I do apologize that you did not have this sooner. We were working to get this refined. But let's take highway, for instance. So we show you what the current spend is. We lay out the scenarios in which we are recommending. And again, that's agnostic to what we believe can actually be passed. That is, we're creating a menu for you to start from. We also are laying out what we believe will be the return on investment for those for that investment as well. And we do the same for bridges. We do the same for culverts, maintenance. We've distilled it down so that you can actually see what the cost benefit is in terms of those decisions. So through that also, then in the document, you will find that you have corresponding information in terms of let's take pavement investments. It will show where we are prioritizing that investment. If we go on to bridges, again, we have laid out a strategy, not to project specific corridors, prioritized areas, and we can get you the more granular if that is what you'd like us to follow up with, which it sounds like, Senator Boquist, that's a yes. And then we have safety investments, of which you will also see in here. And then we've done the same for congestion, et cetera. So maybe it's best if we leave it there in terms of what we have presented. I will tell you that we are, oh, please.
Senator Winters. Just a
quick please.
Question, because as you put more meat on this, because you come back, that it would be also helpful because it's more than just general fund. You know, as you look at various projects, there could be you could have the federal dollars that are also there, so you're getting a total picture of the funding of a particular project. And also, looking at bridges, whether or not that become an expressway in order to have pickup dollars through that mode. So all of it is not, as I think I heard in going around the state and asking questions, that there are various funding variables that can be a part of these mixes. So it would be helpful when you bring and read and begin to define down the projects of what's possible.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senator Winters, you're exactly correct. If we were to just take transit, for instance, if we were able to come up with a funding mechanism to leverage the federal dollars that brings more to Oregon, we can then maximize our system. So those are things that we can come back to you with as well. Happy to.
Co-Chair Beyer, and then Representative Smith.
I just wanted to comment that I think based on what we asked you to do, you've done a really nice job.
Thank you.
Putting this together. It's a good...
Especially in a short amount of time.
In a short amount of time, this is one of the best presentations of the transportation picture that I've seen.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I too, want to compliment you and staff on putting this together. Well done. I want to highlight what my two senators from Ways and Means have pointed out, and that there really is an opportunity, I believe, and I think you're hearing they believe as well, to leverage state dollars with potential federal resources. And without getting too political here, we all heard on election night that the new president-elect is going to be wanting to make additional investments in infrastructure. And I think it's going to be very important for this committee to watch that carefully, to make sure that we pick up every possible dollar we can. And as Senator Winters pointed out, those pots of federal funds are diverse and many and have the potential to be growing in this next biennium. And I want to make sure, I guess I need assurance that we're taking every step possible to garner those dollars, to leverage them. And so at some future point, I'd be interested in hearing from ODOT what steps we are taking to ensure that we have our thumb on that pulse back in Washington, D.C. The scariest thing for me would be for us to pass a package and get out front of Congress, who then passes a package, and we miss the opportunity to leverage.
Sure.
And I think we better be sensitive to that. So thank you. Great presentation.
Thank you, Representative Smith, and we'll have staff take note of those things that you would like to have brought forward in the future. Representative Smith Warner, did you have a comment or question? Vice Chair Benz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So there's a series of remarks about efficiency and transparency and all those big words, which are pretty much meaningless unless we see how you're actually going to do it.
Okay.
So a lot of people would say you want a 44% increase for rewarding a job not being well done now without appropriate protections in place. So I heard the remark about proving that you're going to be doing it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay.
And so one thing that would help would be a pie chart that shows how many dollars are going to actual asphalt and roads and bridges, and how much are going to labor, and how many people you plan on adding to the department or taking away, and what your levels of efficiency are, and how you're going to truly improve it. Because when I go home and say, oh, gee, I added this up, and I did, it appears to be about a 41-cent gas tax increase. 41 cents. I don't think I'm going to get out of town alive.
Right.
Whatever it ends up being, I'm going to have to be able to convince them that the control features are in place that aren't in place now, because they don't believe that they are.
Right.
So the next time I see this, it's great, wonderful, but we need one just as good on that efficiency piece.
Okay.
We are in radical agreement.
Yes, we are.
I think, just of note, a management review is underway by McKinsey. We have spent a lot of time asking them questions that we want answered, that hopefully we'll get to some of the specifics that you reference, Representative Benz. And I think that the timing of that is February 1, I believe, which is fully intended to be done in a time to incorporate needed changes and oversight into this process. So we put them on a very short leash, and I think it's a credible organization with McKinsey It costs us a little more to do it, but it's underway, and I think it'll hopefully give us the answers where you guys will have confidence that we can move forward.
Thank you. We appreciate your quick turnaround. I know this has been challenging, and I will mirror my co-chair and say thank you for your good work. We will look forward to having many more conversations in the future. Any further questions for this panel? Thank you very much for being here tonight.
Thank you.
And next, we would like to call up from the Oregon Transportation Forum. We have two panels of presenters, Mr. Hagedorn, Mr. Campbell, and Mr. Russell. And I would like to thank a young man who is in our audience tonight. Sir, I believe I saw you this morning about 7 o'clock in the Coastal Caucus. Is that correct? And what is your name?
Madam Chair, may I introduce him?
Would you please do that, Senator Johnson? He started as early as we did this morning.
He was in my office at 7:15 this morning. This is Keegan Roscoe, who is from Astoria, aspires to have a career in public service, perhaps elective life at some point in time. I made him promise that he couldn't come unless he swore he wouldn't run for Senate District 16 in Tawana. But he has gone the distance today. Thank you for recognizing
him. Well, Keegan, you have my appreciation for your desire to spend it. You've been here almost 12 hours so far. We're going to go a little longer. Thank you for your interest, and we're really grateful that you're here. Gentlemen, in no particular order, welcome to our committee.
Well, thank you very much, co-chairs, vice co-chairs, and committee members. I'm Drew Hagedorn, appearing for the moment in my capacity as president of the Oregon Transportation Forum. And I want at the outset to thank all of you on behalf of forum members for all the work that you've done. It's not lost upon us that you spent all of your summer and the better portion of the fall traveling around our great state to meet with folks throughout Oregon and communities large and small to talk about transportation policy. And I think this, coupled with the governor's visioning committee and some of the work that we at the Transportation Forum have done and other colleagues in the transportation sector, have really prepared us for this session, notwithstanding some of the barriers that we've talked about today, in a way that we haven't been in recent memory. So I think there is some real momentum to move forward. And on behalf of the forum, again, thank you very much. I was asked this evening to come in and talk to you a little bit about who the forum is, talk a bit about the process that we've undertaken throughout the interim to come up with some policy proposals for your consideration, and then talk about where we are in that process before I turn to some of my colleagues to talk about their particular transportation sectors. So as many of you know, the Transportation Forum is a big tent coalition. It has just about anybody and everybody that you might think of that cares deeply about transportation policy in our state. That includes cities and counties, and ports, rail, aviation, environmental interests, roadway stakeholders such as AAA and the trucking associations, associated general contractors, and non-roadway, transit association, bike ped, and other modes. So it's a very diverse group. But we work well together, and I think that's the power of our group, that we try to come together and coalesce behind a set of policy proposals. To conduct our work, we divided ourselves into three committees. The first committee is not unlike the committees that you form yourself in, a revenue committee. So we looked at revenue policies for your consideration. We had a finance and policy committee that looked at appropriation side and the policy initiatives that we might propose to the assembly. And then a strategy and communications. And their work really begins at the outset of the session to assist this committee with its work and really the broader assembly to help us advance a transportation package in the 2017 Legislative Assembly. Where we are in the process currently, our committees have reported back. Just after the November general election, we met for the AMG and conducted a straw man poll, not unlike what you talked about as some of your next steps. We're in the process of tabulating all of that. We've seen the results. Our board will meet on Monday of next week to review all of that, and then we will compile that information into a document for your review. So it'll be policy options. Clearly what we know, it's going to be a multimodal transportation investment package. It will include investments in virtually all the modes that I allude to. So investments in revenue proposals for roadway and non-roadway. Connect Oregon will be included in our proposals as well. I'm going to pause now, co-chairs, and turn it over to Craig Campbell. You'll hear from Craig, and then you'll hear from Bob, and then finally you'll hear from me for the Transit Association, and then our second panel will come up with representatives from the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, and the Oregon Environmental Council. All of those folks, by the way, are members of the Oregon Transportation Forum Board. Because we are where we are in our process, the folks that will follow me will be talking really with the hat of their individual association, so as not as members of the forum, but with the hat of AAA or for the trucking associations. And I wanted to mention that so you knew that we weren't getting ahead of our own process at the forum. So I'll pause and turn it over to Craig.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA. I also wanted to thank all of you for putting in the enormous amount of time that you have already put in and the amount of time I know you're going to be putting in, as you're a very diverse group of folks, and this is a very difficult challenge to bring diversity together to a single solution. So I give you all of my thanks for that. I'm here to represent motorists, and unfortunately, I'm a policy wonk. I love to talk about the possibilities and the opportunities associated with the transportation funding package. Unfortunately, I often find myself being part of the cold water brigade a bit, and I'll start by making what's probably not a very culturally apt analogy, but it's something that's come to my attention recently, and that is when I was younger, I used to put together a Christmas list. That Christmas list was usually done in front of a Sears catalog, where almost everything in the catalog toy section that I saw, I wanted. And so I put it all down on a very long list. Unfortunately, and I, of course, were in a public setting, so I won't tell you how I know how Santa feels about those sort of lists, but Santa has to make a determination about how much you can actually fill on that list. And unfortunately, oftentimes, I, representing motorists, get to be the one who kind of suggests what Santa can handle and what he can't handle. So I'm going to provide you with a rather quick list of just items that on my want list for this package, or AAA's want list on this package. And then I'm going to talk briefly about a few things to be concerned about and how to frame that. I'm going to go very quickly through the list. The first ones are a couple of transparency, accountability issues. They shouldn't come as much of a surprise, at least one of them. We do need to complete the ODOT management review so you can be well informed about those things you can do that will allow the public to feel very confident about how their money is spent, even if nothing is found, which would be great. It's very important that we do that. Another thing, and this is really more about perception, and that is providing independent staff support to the Transportation Commission. So there really isn't any question about whether or not they're overly biased by information that's provided by ODOT. I don't anticipate it would change any of the decisions, but it's very good from a viewpoint of the public to know that there's an independent staff that's supporting that effort. This is something that comes all the way back from 2009 when $50 million was diverted from highway funds to non-highway funds under Section 56 sub 2 of that act, and we're asking that $50 million go back from non-highway to highway maintenance preservation and those sort of activities. Price containment mechanism on the low carbon fuels clean fuel standard, and this is really making sure that the cost price going up as a result of that program doesn't interfere with our ability to raise taxes for highway expenditures, and to make sure that the blending doesn't adversely affect the warranty and ability of my members' automobiles to operate effectively. Increasing car and truck taxes, try to keep it to no more than $300 million, and I'll come back to why that's the case in a little bit, and Mr. Russell is going to talk a lot about that as well. Do at least one major congestion relief project in the metro area. Congestion is a continuing problem for my members, not just in the Portland area, but throughout the state, and showing that there is at least something we're doing to start adjusting that problem is critical so that we can show that the money that they're spending in taxes is actually going to make a difference in that. Providing clear project selection criteria for the department on how they expend their monies. I'm not talking about a list of 17 items. I'm talking about a list of 5 or 6. There's that wonderful deal where you get everyone together to talk about what you're going to do. Everyone comes up with an idea. You brainstorm, then you start consolidating everything until you've got five five things that I call narrowing to the kitchen sink. You've eliminated nothing. Everything's there. And you can do whatever you want because somehow you'll be able to fit it in with the criteria. So I'm talking about providing clear, direct, prioritized criteria. Those can be developed by the department. They can be developed by the Transportation Commission, but they do need to be developed. Create a statewide multimodal people-moving plan. We have a freight plan. We have a transit plan. We have a bike-ped plan. We don't have a motorist plan. But a people-moving plan would do that. We need to have a plan that talks about how you integrate the modes so that we effectively move people from one place to another, whether they choose to take the bus, ride a bike, walk, take a streetcar, or drive their car for any stretch of the trip that they take. So it's very important that we have a plan that reflects that. Cascadia event. I'm not going to go into too much on this, but it's important that we start with the long-term way of making sure that after the event that we can get goods and services to those areas that have been hit, which means recovery corridors being our first priority. And I won't say anything more about that because I could go on for quite some time. You all know the cost and difficulty associated with that and what the likely ramifications of a Cascadia event are going to be regardless with what we do for our infrastructure. Provide stable funding for rest areas in our state. My members depend upon those rest areas. And we need to make sure that that's taken care of. And then this is one, and these items you're going to find on the list that Mr. Russell has provided for you, and he's going to add a couple of other items as well. There's one that's not on that list that I want to mention. It has come up before. Eventually, we're going to have to move away from a gas tax, and I would encourage you to look strongly at the recommendations of the Road User Fee Task Force in implementing a road user fee with a later implementation date to give ODOT plenty of time to make sure it's done right when it starts, because we can't afford to fail that on that outside or right out of the box. Our big concern is making sure that we have enough to do as much as we can with our transportation system without risking a referral. I've been on the referring end. It's not tough. And when you do refer it, you won't win. That's not where we want to be. We want to be in a position where we pass a transportation funding package that's sustained and continues. Part of that is there's the big, there seems to be a either or discussion around go big or go home. My suggestion is, if you're going to go big, that's fine, but spread it out over a period, a long period of time. We used to do 2-cent, 3-cent gas tax increases back in the 80s. It worked very well. They didn't get referred. There was not a lot of hullabaloo around them. But doing something that equates to, and the $300 million we're talking about, that's an 11-cent increase. That's probably well above what the public's tolerance is for an increase anyway. But if you do it in a way that you continue every year and you get the public used to the idea that we're going to have a 2-cent, 3-cent increase, sure, some of that's going to be eaten up by inflation, but it also means we're going to have more and more money gradually coming into the highway fund that we need to take care of our basic maintenance needs and also our congestion and expansion needs. I will make one other comment about congestion. Congestion cannot be solved solely by other modes. That's a critical part, but it can't be solely solved by that. You do have to expand capacity. Our population growth is not going to allow us to solve it in any one way, but by not taking care of the capacity expansion as well, we're not going to be able to deal with the congestion problem that we've got in this state. And with that, I will introduce to my right Mr. Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Russell. I'm representing the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I too would like to thank you for your dedication to transportation and spending your summer touring the state. For those of you that were on the Vision Committee, I doubly thank you because you've done it twice.
Thank you, Mr. Russell.
First, let me provide a disclaimer. In that my board will not take a position on a transportation funding package until we have a bill in our hand. Having said that, I have provided the committee with written testimony that is on OLIS, and that has been approved by my board. So, with, and that basically does two things. It says these are the things that are the critical elements that we think need to be in a transportation funding package. And this is a $300 million transportation funding package that we can support, and it has lots of detail. And I would recommend that for your evening reading, but I am not going to provide that testimony. I'm going to talk about some different stuff here. And there were a few items on that particular list that Mr. Campbell left off that are important to my industry, and I wanted to pick those up. We, too, are very concerned about congestion. We think the package should contain some bonding component for capacity expansion projects. Much like the Jobs and Transportation Act, we're suggesting $1 billion in bonding. That's just a suggestion on our part. Transit operations, we've been talking about transit for a long time. You folks are aware that capital expenditure for transit is fairly easy to obtain, but for operations, there is no source of funding. And as all of you have been talking about transit, it's a statewide issue. We have to do something because my hair's getting pretty gray, and I'm going to have to stop driving, as are some of you. And we need a statewide transit solution, and I think that this session is the time when we really have to focus on that. So that is very important to me, and the reason that I say that, which I say sometimes, is you need to help me get his cars out of the way of my trucks.
And vice versa.
And the third item is Connect Oregon. That has been a successful multimodal program. It could use some tweaks. There's no question about it. But we certainly recommend that we continue it. As Mr. Campbell was talking about a multimodal solution for the movement of passengers, the freight industry has long used multimodal solutions, and Connect Oregon is a big part of that. So we would recommend that you continue with that program at some level of funding. So now I'd really like to talk about the elephant in the room, which is the size of the package. We've heard all kinds of numbers for months now. $1 billion was what we heard tonight. $1 billion would require you to double every tax and fee that currently feeds into the state highway fund, which is a pretty big tax increase. That seems pretty large to us, and something that that would be very difficult. But recognizing that that may very well describe the need. So what is it that we can do, and how do we get ourselves into this mess in the first place, or what I sometimes refer to as the Gordian knot that we've created? And there's sort of four elements to it. The first is the feds. They haven't kept up their part of the bargain. They built the interstate system, and then they sort of walked away. The federal gas tax currently is 18.4 cents a gallon. The diesel tax is 24.4. And they have not been raised since 1993. The trucking industry has gone to Congress repeatedly and asked for them to increase the diesel fuel tax. We have asked for increases as high as 40 cents a gallon, and we have been repeatedly rebuffed. We are very hopeful that that will change with the new administration, and we'll see. The industry is committed to increasing the federal taxes for infrastructure, and of course that money comes back to the states. That's really hurt our state highway system, but it's also hurt our local governments, because a lot of that federal money flows through ODOT and goes to the local governments for their streets, roads, and bridges. Whoops, must have got too loud there. That's been a real problem in that we've not been able to maintain a reasonable level of funding because the feds haven't done their share. The second piece, and I'm not complaining, I'm just sort of stating the facts. And we have a constitutional provision, Article 9, and it basically says that for all taxes and fees that are collected from people that operate motor vehicles and all that stuff, goes into the highway fund. And there's another piece to that, however, that says that the legislature has to make sure that there is equity between cars and trucks. And there's a study called the Cost Allocation Study that's done every 2 years. Those of you who are on the Transportation Committees know that that is the most boring presentation that you hear during the entire 2 years. But it's a very important part of our system. And so what it does is it ensures equity, but it also, in our case, makes Oregon the most expensive state in the union to operate a truck, and by a considerable margin. We used to leapfrog with New York, but New York, about a year ago, decided that they needed to reduce their business taxes because it was running business out of the state of New York. And some of the taxes they reduced were their truck taxes. So now we are the number one, and there is no competition for that whatsoever. To sort of put it in perspective, if you took the weight mile tax, which we have, and you take the 80,000-pound rate, which is the common semi that you see running up and down the highway, it runs about 85% of the miles in the state, and the tax rate is 13.65 cents a gallon. Or a mile, excuse me. If you converted that to a fuel tax, a diesel fuel tax, it's 98.28 cents a gallon, which is a pretty hefty fuel tax. And what we're proposing in a $300 million increase is another 30 cents a gallon to the trucking industry. It's really significant. Senator Byron and I have talked about this a lot of times, and he was said earlier, and that for every dollar you collect from cars, it's $1.33 from trucks. I think it's actually more than that. We pay 35% of the total highway fund, and we run 8% of the miles in the state. If you did it just by a per-mile basis, all the taxes and fees that go into the highway fund, cars pay 2 cents a mile, and trucks pay 17.5 cents a mile. That's currently. And so there is, and we're not complaining. We do more damage. We take up more space. We need to pay more. But the reality is for us to survive, we cannot absorb huge tax increases. And when you're talking $1 billion, that's huge. When you're talking $300 million, to us, that's huge. The Jobs and Transportation Act was a $300 million package. In 2007, or before we passed the Jobs and Transportation Act, we had 9,500 Oregon-based trucking companies. Today, we have 7,500. We've lost 2,000 trucking companies in this state. Part of it was the recession. There's no doubt about it. But if you talk to my members, they will also tell you absorbing that tax increase from the Jobs and Transportation Act was also part of that, what cost us those trucking companies. So we have to be careful. We're transporting 75% of the tons of freight in the state. If we damage the trucking industry, we're flirting with our damaging our economy. Part of the third part that's got us here is that we don't use general fund money for transportation, for highways. Most states do. We're really kind of unique in that regard, in that we don't use general fund money. We did fund two projects earlier this year with lottery money that was in the reallocation bill or whatever it was called. That's the first time that I've seen in 35 years that we've spent any general fund money on highways. Other states use general fund all the time. Our Washington, California. Matter of fact, a lot of states use their sales taxes. And what they do is they allow local governments to do an increment of the state sales tax that goes to transportation, and then the state itself takes part of their sales tax for transportation. Now, we're not going to get general fund money, I don't believe, for highways. We have other transportation needs, and we're going to hear about those later, that are going to require general fund money this session. I don't think we're going to get a sales tax. So we're limited in the kinds of things that we can do. And we've been talking about congestion, and many of you heard all over the state that congestion in Portland is a concern. It is the largest concern to my industry, no matter where my members are located, because they're going in and out of Portland. So you look at the projects and the cost of the projects to relieve congestion. The one that's probably the furthest along is the Rose Quarter project. Last I heard, it was $300 million to fix that one project. I just saw when we were flipping through Chair Bainey's slides that that has changed. It's now $400 to $450 million for that project. That's only one project. You look at every intersection of an interstate highway in the Portland metro area, it needs work. And those are very, very expensive projects. You can't raise enough money in a statewide transportation funding package to address Portland's problems. You just can't do it. And we're almost at the tipping point where if we don't do it, it's going to be almost impossible to get back even with it. So the only thing that I can think of that we can do, and my industry doesn't like it, his folks don't like it, I know you don't like it, is tolling. And that is really the only way that we can fund those projects in Portland is to toll them. And I hate to say that, but that's sort of the reality of it. And I would hope that you would really think hard in this package about doing a project and toll it in Portland and start that process. It's consistent with the user pay system. It's a way of collecting the tax from all the people that are using that facility. If you tried to do a regional tax, a regional gas tax, a regional registration fee, you won't collect near enough money, nor will you tax the people that are using the facility. Because the trucks that are located in other states, they're not going to pay tax to go across that facility because they're not buying fuel or doing any of those things in that region. So the only way that you can capture them is to toll the facility. Sort of the last thing, and I was told to address this because if I didn't, somebody was going to ask me, and that is the referral initiative sort of system that we have in Oregon. That's the fourth piece that's got us into this Gordian knot. And I was told that I would be asked if my association would refer the transportation package and under what conditions. Well, I'm here to tell you that that's above my pay grade. My board is going to have to make that decision, and they will not make that decision until they see the totality of the package that you develop. However, maybe a little history would help. When we did the 2009 package, one of my members attempted...
Mr. Russell, one of our members has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Representative McLean.
It's just that, you know, I have a copy of
sure.
what you've just been reading off of, and the three subcommittees, did they work together or separately? Was there a coalition of those committees?
For the Oregon Transportation Forum, there were three subcommittees. We absolutely worked together. The forum has worked together. There will be a report that comes to you from the forum, as Mr. Hagedorn explained. We're not through our process.
That's fine. And so this is the question that I'm asking in a rhetorical frame okay. that you can maybe address in the report. And that is that you talked about a lot of need, mm-hmm. and you talked about a lot of things that you hope get built. And I want to see some correlation between the need list, like, you know, your little Christmas list, and the actual funding mechanisms that you're suggesting. And then also, sure. you made one other comment. You know, we hear a lot from people who want other people to pay. And I actually like user fees and believe in tolling as one of the things on the table. But again, I think even with your big tent group, it's important for you to talk in the revenue and in the financial tool list exactly how you think that's a balanced package, not just what the needs as far as a balanced intermodal type of package. So I think we need that from all three committees, not just one.
Madam Chair and Representative McLean, absolutely, I agree with you. What you have in my testimony for highways is a balanced package. In terms of the other modes that have to be funded with general fund, we're not suggesting how that gets done, without a doubt.
Senator Johnson.
You said you had been asked whether or not you would refer the package to the Trucking Association. This is largely a rhetorical question. Have others been asked that same loyalty oath? Because I can look across this room and I can see...
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I've drugged them over the coals, yes. Specifically.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
So I was speaking to that point.
And Mr. Russell, I just want to note that we are now 5 minutes past what was going to be our predictable end time. We still have five people to testify, so...
I apologize for taking so much time. One more minute.
I just want to apologize to the audience and let you know that you are welcome to stay as long as you would like. We will complete all of these panels. We are committed to that, and I apologize for the lateness, but this has been, I think, a robust and very important conversation.
So when we passed the Jobs and Transportation Act in 2009, one of my members attempted to refer that package. AAA, my organization, and AGC got together, and we hired attorneys and did all that stuff to thwart his efforts, and we were successful. He then, having learned about the system, and filed an initiative, and his initiative would have rolled back taxes before OTIA 3, which was 2003, and then it would have required a vote of the people to increase transportation taxes going forward. So it was a fairly draconian piece. He started collecting signatures. He got it filed. It was successfully. He started collecting signatures. He and I had a long talk, and he dropped that effort. He's still one of my members, but it was one guy that did that. I would also point out to you that there were 10 gas tax proposals on the ballot this November, local gas tax proposals, and all 10 of them were defeated, and most of them fairly sound. So, as many of you have said, we have to make sure that it's referral proof. Yep. We totally agree with that. And I will thank you for the time and conclude at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Russell.
Madam Kutcher, before he goes, I was also asked to make sure that I put on the record the statement about the referral and what would cause AAA to refer. And, of course, it would take a board action to do it, but we have historical precedents as to what triggers AAA's referral. And there are three items that would do that. One is not complying with cost responsibility under the Constitution, busting the trust under the Constitution, and the elimination of the weight mile tax. And those are the three issues that are our triggers.
Thank you for that clarification. Mr. Hagedorn.
Yes, mindful of the time, I'll consolidate my comments. So thank you very much. Drew Hagedorn, appearing now on behalf of the Oregon Transit Association. Talk real quickly about the revenue environment for transit to remind you that we don't get a lot of dedicated state revenue. We've had some direct legislative appropriations over the year in the form of general fund. Those are sporadic. We get a small piece of the cigarette tax. We have a piece of the non-highway use gas tax, the so-called lawnmower fund when you go fill up your gas bucket to fill up your lawnmower. And then in limited instances in mass transit districts, TriMet, Lane Transit District, they have the opportunity to have a payroll tax. That's a local funding source, not a state funding source. And some of our smaller agencies can avail themselves of a payroll tax. We've also been very appreciative and benefited from the Connect Oregon program, and we'll support that going forward. In front of you all, shifting gears now to the materials that we distributed, and that's this Better Transit Oregon document. And I apologize for not putting that on OLIS. The size of the document doesn't lend itself to that. This is an expression of our association's observation that this legislative assembly and indeed voters don't want you to write a blank check. And so what we tried to do here, which we've never done before, is retain a consultant to help us answer the question, what would it look like if we receive another $100 million in support for transit agencies throughout the state? And we borrowed from the Vision Committee's rough number to kind of work through this process. We had to pick a number, and in an ideal world, that's what we would want. But what this is, we went out and we did 10 pilot projects, or at least picked 10 agencies, large and small, urban and rural, throughout our state, that are reflective of our state's transit infrastructure. And the consultant went and interviewed all those folks, and you'll see what it looks like for those communities if they were to receive some additional resources. And they work with ODOT and others to compile this data. And I'm assuming at some point we'll do a deep dive into transit as part of your work plan, and I'll have the consultant here to kind of walk you through the background of this data and so forth. But you can see it's pretty robust data, and it actually demonstrates not only for this audience, but for voters, for other community leaders, businesses, what it might look like if there were more money for transit. So I invite you to kind of look through that. It gets pretty specific. It's in alphabetical order. So if you took the Cascade East Transit piece, you'll see the demonstration of the kinds of projects that we could do with this money. And we're not guaranteeing that, of course, would happen, but it's supposed to be illustrative of what we could do. And then on the back of each of those pages, there's sort of testimonials. Some of them are different. Some of them are writers. Some of them are community leaders. Some of them are businesses that talk about how they use transit. Because, again, the audience here is not just the members of the Assembly. It's broader than that, recognizing that we have to make this case throughout the state. So that's a word about what the work that we've undertaken, recognizing that we have to demonstrate to you and the voters how we'd use additional resources. I'll say, too, a word on accountability. We recognize, again, that you're not going to provide us a blank check and say thank you and let us run off and go forth. We need to be accountable for those resources. So we've undertaken some work in conjunction with ODOT to look at the accountability measures that we currently have today and then say, is that enough? Do we need to do more and come up with some ideas about what that would be? And obviously, we'll be working in concert with all of you on that and the other members of the Assembly. That work is not yet completed. I'm hopeful it will be by the time the legislative session convenes, but I wanted to make a note on that because it's been a theme, as we've heard throughout this presentation. Lastly, I can talk a little bit about revenue options. I know we're limited on time. We can get into that more in subsequent hearings, but we've done a lot of thinking about revenue options, and we recognize that in the transit context, we're not talking about increasing an existing tax like the gas tax. We're talking about new revenue, whether it be state revenue or local revenue. The Group of Eight back in the 2015 session identified the employee-based payroll tax for those agencies that currently have it, TriMet and some of the legacy agencies, Wilsonville, Sandy, and the like, and Lane Transit District to the south. That would be great for those agencies. It doesn't address some of the concerns for the districts that don't avail themselves of a payroll tax. We have some ideas about how to go forward, either to do that statewide or to do an employee-based payroll tax in the current payroll tax communities, making sure we mitigate that for regressivity. That's one of the concerns that we've heard from stakeholders. So we have that as a concept, and we can get deeper into that. There are several others. But with that, I think I'll pause, given the limited time, and thank all of you. We look forward to working in conjunction with you and on behalf of the Transportation Forum and also the Transit Association. Thank you for all your work. We look forward to the road ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Hagenor. Any final questions for this panel? All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Next, I would like to call up Chris Hagerbaumer, Mary Kyle McCurdy, and Garrett Kransky. Thank you for your patience. We are grateful that you're willing to stick it out with us here tonight. My apologies for the lateness of the hour.
Thank you so much, Madam Co-Chair, Co-Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Garrett Kransky. I'm the Policy Director with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'll keep my remarks very brief because I know we're running over time. But a quick point of information from my organization as I get started. The next time you hear from me, I'll be representing the Street Trust, which is our expanded name and mission at the Bicycle Transportation Alliance to include transit and pedestrian-related priorities in addition to the bicycle work we've been doing for the last 26 years. So didn't want you to be tricked by that new name when I come back in the new year.
Thank you.
Our focus within the context of a transportation funding package has been primarily on the safety end and thinking about all of the serious injuries and fatalities on our roadways and the best strategies that we know of to address those issues. So goal one for us is to achieve a statutory goal of zero serious injuries in traffic and work zone areas of transportation by the year 2035. We want to establish a broad task force to help build consensus around our shared safety goals that focus on policy, roadway improvements, outreach, and enforcement. So that Vision Zero goal is on top of the list for us in terms of safety. Number two is to increase funding for street safety projects for people that are walking and biking, both inside and outside of the highway right-of-way. So that's a top priority for us. Additionally, we want to see an expansion in this, and I know that you've been hearing about it all across the state, an expansion of the existing Safe Routes to School program that we have, essentially to help build safe places to walk, bike, and access transit to school while prioritizing Title I schools, where a majority of students are eligible to receive free and reduced lunch. We want to prioritize the completion of our existing Safe Routes to School plans and ensure adequate education funding while building out our bundled capital projects that exist in that program. So we're excited to see recommendations from the Governor's Transportation Vision Panel on that. We've been excited to hear that that was a major feature of the conversations across the state. And finally, I'd like to point out that we are in strong support of launching a new statewide youth transit program to fund transit passes and improve transit service that will expand youth access to schools, jobs, and other opportunities. And while I'm here, I wanted to acknowledge some of the conversation around skin in the game that members of the committee have pointed to and the potential for some kind of bicycle tax. I think that Co-Chair Beyer pointed out the challenge in front of us as well as anyone by saying that we really would have to design something that does not cost more to administer than it would raise in revenue. And I have already reached out to a handful of you to express a willingness to work on that proposal, and just want to make sure that you know that we'll be willing to sit down with you and talk about options. But knowing that the challenge that Co-Chair Beyer has pointed out is probably the biggest one in front of us.
Thank you very much.
Questions? Co-chairs and committee members, my name is Chris Hagerbaumer. I'm the deputy director at Oregon Environmental Council. So I represent the E for Environment on the Oregon Transportation Forum Board. And these other two are also board members. And I know you must be exhausted if you've been here since 7 a.m., so I'll be brief. Besides all of the multimodal asks that are part of this package, another area that's really important from an environmental perspective is that the technology we need for our vehicles to move away from polluting vehicles towards super clean vehicles. So electric vehicles, we'd like to see some support for the purchase of electric vehicles in this package. They're actually super cheap to operate and maintain. Think about it. You don't even need an oil change. But upfront costs can be a barrier. Prices are definitely falling. You can get several models for lease them for less than $200 a month. But some sort of rebate that covers the cost of a down payment would really open up that market further and help Oregon reach its goals. In fact, if we're going to meet the 2050 greenhouse gas emission goals for this state, 90% of the vehicles out there are going to need to be electric or some other technology of the future that's non-polluting. And so also we'd like to look at the support to help for the gap funding for transit districts to get more electric buses. So Lane Transit District is experimenting with this, and they also super reduce the cost of maintaining and operating the buses over the lifetime for those districts. And in addition, in the EV world, we'd like to see really a focus on helping low-income and moderate-income households access those vehicles. And the folks within the Oregon Transportation Forum who are really the experts is Drive Oregon. And so they'll be coming and talking with you guys, I'm sure, and they have some ideas for some revenue sources for this. We absolutely second all of the discussion tonight about prioritizing maintenance of the roadway system first. And the issue around the orphan highways that you raised, Representative Lively, that's one that we also strongly second. I'll also just talk briefly about accountability and trust issues. You're going to see some recommendations from the Oregon Transportation Forum on that. Our OEC and our allies did send a letter to the Oregon Transportation Commission about things that should be covered in the audit, and we hope that a lot of those are covered, and we look forward to seeing that audit come out soon. And also, when we think about really maximizing accountability and transparency and return on investment. I would say I'm a member of the STIP Stakeholder Committee, and you heard about the STIP earlier, and Bob Russell and Craig Campbell are also members of that committee. And I actually think that the state and the Oregon Transportation Commission have some really good criteria that they apply when they think about what projects to support. But there is still ways to improve that objectivity of project evaluation and to be more transparent so that the public understands how decisions are made. And one state that we could look to is the state of Virginia, which has developed a tool called Smart Scale. And I just love their tagline, which is investing limited tax dollars in the right projects that meet the most critical transportation needs for Virginia. And so that's one thing that we could be looking at, is how does Virginia do this? We also heard a lot from Utah. A couple folks from Utah came and gave great presentations over the past year about how they passed their transportation package. And that involved, I actually think, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, a taxpayer could look on their iPhone and look up a project, and they could figure out, what were the criteria, what were they going to get for their money? And so that's the other thing, is how you sell things to folks, is you really show this is how your money is going to be spent, and it's going to be spent wisely. Another thing is that the 2009 package required the state to develop a least cost transportation planning tool that I was also on the committee on that, including Bob and Craig and others. And that tool is a fantastic tool for figuring out, for really helping you weigh things evenly and look at different kinds of values that you have. But honestly, it's kind of sitting on the shelf, and I think we should take it off and really use it in the state. And then last thing about this is that there's a whole area called practical design, and that's really looking at the engineering of projects and making sure that they're scoped to be built to really stay within that core purpose and need that you're looking to fill. So I will end there.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, co-chairs McEwen and Beyer, and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, interim director of 1000 Friends of Oregon and a member of the Oregon Transportation Forum board. I'm going last and briefest because our focus on this is transit. You've already heard from Drew Hagedorn on transit. We do support the entire package and the elements that you have heard, and it really is a transportation package. My organization is particularly interested in statewide transit. You've all expressed how you have heard from big cities and small towns that transit is really in demand in all of those. But transit looks different in different places, and therefore the dollars that are used to spend on transit have to be flexible for whether it's operations or capital, whether it's high-capacity transit in the Portland area or whether it's a dial-a-ride in a town that doesn't have any kind of transit at all yet. And so we will be looking to support you and your efforts in coming up with a statewide transportation package that includes secure and stable funding for transit. And the Oregon Transportation Forum has developed a menu of funding options that you will soon be seeing, but I think it's important to emphasize what you already heard from Drew and the Better Transit Oregon pamphlet that he gave you, and what we've observed in other places, including the Puget Sound most recently, that if you can look and see exactly how your transit dollars, how those dollars, wherever they're coming from, are going to be spent. And as they did in the Puget Sound, they could see exactly when a light rail stop was going to arrive in their town. It might be 5 or 10 years out, but they knew it was coming, just as one example. That is how to help talk about transportation funding, in particular transit in this case. So I will end there. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I just want to make sure I'm clear. So with the Transportation Forum, Oregon Transportation Forum, Drew Hagedorn, Craig Campbell, Bob Russell, Garrett, Chris, Mary, all of you are on the same page?
Yes.
Thank you. Vice Chair Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
A quick question. Does that include that they're all going to have skin in the game?
I
raise that because it's like I'm a mother of four sons, and I can still recall all the four sons coming to me at various levels of their growth in life, and they all had these wish lists. And, you know, as the mom and dad are the bread earners, and you're scratching your head and say, okay, you know, let's see, one's old enough to get a paper route, the other's old enough to do this, so we all got, as a household, got skin in this game. So as we go through these wish lists, and they're wide and varied, you know, my question, and it's to all the panels, not just to you, you know, of you too can come and tell us and provide some information to us. Whether the group that you're representing, and you did mention that you're willing to sit down and talk about, you know, how the cyclist community can actually, you know, look at their piece. But I do think that this whole issue of skin in the game, I heard talking about the electric cars, you know, my other hat is over in human services. So the group that I deal with the most in that are families who are struggling, families who are trying to get to work and who can't afford the electric cars. So, you know, as I sit here listening to the wish list, I'm trying to sit here as a legislator saying, you know, I need your help in knowing how to, where some of this is going to come from.
Co-chairs McEwen and Beyer and Senator Winters, just as an example of something that will be on the Oregon Transportation Forum's list of possible funding sources for transit is a statewide payroll tax that could be applied to both employers and employees. You mentioned the clients that you deal with in social services. There's a regressivity to that kind of a tax. We'll be looking to mitigate that regressivity, but not to eliminate that as a possible source for how we fund transit. So I think those are the that's not quite the same skin in the game as an excise tax on bicycles that Garrick was talking about, but it is that same kind of thing, how we all have to look to see how can we balance all of these, whether it's how much of a gas tax, what's a payroll and employer and employee tax look like,
and
all
I
of that.
And I hope when you're putting that together that you actually look at the difference between the viability from the economy from the metropolitan area versus the rural area.
Kenny, that's a good point.
I think Vice Chair
Benz,
did you have a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was one of the Gang of Eight, and we struggled during a month to do 2 years of work. Toward the end, it blew up. There are many different fingers pointed different directions. My question to you three, so I'd like you each, if you could respond to this. The challenge is not necessarily in your group a referral. You can share with us if you have the ability to do it. We'd like to know. But it's more of a bad grade on the report card that you issue for those folks that represent people in Portland. And so I would ask you if you could share with us so we know what it is that would appear in the bill or might appear in the bill from these massive wish lists we're going to be working from that would cause you to grade people down like a C, like a D, like an F on your report cards. What would you see and go, oh my God, you get the point. And feel free to hold forth. Give me the list.
I don't know that I can speak to the whole list, but co-chairs McEwen and Beyer, Representative Benz, I think that the package that, and I don't want to get ahead of the Oregon Transportation Forum's process, but the package of policies and investments that will be put forward in that package are expected to receive broad support from the panel sitting before you, as well as the entire list of stakeholders who are engaged in that body's work. And it is not entirely clear what other levers are out there to increase highways or the kinds of things that might cause a grade to go down in the way that you know describe. Our organization doesn't have a scorecard for legislators, so it's hard for me to speak to that directly, but we understand that this will be a package of investments in highways. Our priority is to make sure that it includes robust investment in transit, bicycle, and pedestrian issues. If those were removed, say, that would be cause for potential opposition to a package that doesn't have a balanced set of investments. So those are the kinds of things that I'm going to be looking for on behalf of my own organization, is to ensure that there's robust investment in the safe routes to school, bicycle, pedestrian, and transit-related priorities. Other organizations will probably be making similar assessments.
Co-chairs McEwen and Byer, Representative Benz, we're looking at a package, and I think you've heard both our panel and the panel before us support all the elements of the package. Bob Russell talked about the importance of transit and other modes of travel for his clients, for the truckers. And I think that's the shared values that we have within the Oregon Transportation Forum, that we all have a much better understanding of the transportation needs of the broad group of folks and organizations that have come together there. So you're going to see a broad package with funding suggestions from the Oregon Transportation Forum, and I don't see anything in that that's going to cause my organization to grade or downgrade someone as a result of that. So,
Madam Chair, sorry, may. So they're not quite, they didn't understand my question, that's apparent. I don't want you to limit your response to what might be and whatever you might present us with. What I'm asking you is, tell us now what you don't want this group up here to come up with that would be really bad and thus cause your organization to go to those who represent you in Portland and say, don't vote for this because we're going to give you a bad grade. Warn us now. Tell us now what it is you don't want in this package. This is the great thing about this open process. I get to ask you. You get to answer. Let me hear it. Otherwise, I will assume that everything is great. I can put anything in the package I like, and you will not object. I need to hear it.
Co-chairs and Representative Benz, we would be concerned if other things not related to transportation were attached to this package. I mean, I think that's true of anyone in this building, you know, of what might be attached to transportation, to a transportation package that isn't related to transportation package. But I don't think it's worthwhile for any of us to speculate on what could happen there. But so it's difficult without, I mean, I'm not trying to be evasive. I can't think of what else is in here. I mean, Garrick mentioned if it wasn't a full package, my organization, I don't believe, would try to, well, we don't have the capacity to refer something, you know, frankly, but we might not be enthusiastic about a package, but I can't imagine us referring something that was simply a gas tax. You know, that's, a gas tax increase is a worthwhile endeavor, regardless of, you know, other things going on, so.
Co-chairs and members of the committee and Representative Benz. There's kind of two questions there. One is, we want a full multimodal package, and we would be pretty unexcited if it only funded the road system. And I think that would be pretty much true of almost every member of the Oregon Transportation Forum as well. And then I think you might be asking a question about the Clean Fuels Program, which was something that got attached to the package in the past, and we would not support a package that tried to tie those two together.
Paula?
Yes, sir.
That's the only thing. Feel free to give me a list by email. Whatever you just mentioned that you wouldn't like. But if that's the only thing, that's good. It's a narrow...
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I want to go back to your membership. Can you tell me, are reports or marine or rail involved in this committee? And if I talk to them, will they hold the same consensus?
Co-chairs and members of the committee and Representative Smith, indeed, on the board, we also have representation from rail. And am I missing somebody, Drew?
Ports.
Thank you. Sorry. And indeed, those folks are not up at the dais, but they were all, you're going to see a great set of recommendations from everyone, and that pretty much folks are all getting around. Yeah.
Would it be possible, Madam Co-Chair, or for whoever it is, to send this committee a list of the members who are on that committee?
Yeah,
I think that's an easier way to get to where Representative Benz is trying.
And Representative Smith, I think we just invited a number because otherwise we would have had 40 people here testifying tonight.
Madam Co-Chair, I thoroughly understand.
And there will be opportunities for all of those folks as we go through this process to come and talk about those things. So thank you for raising that, because it's an issue that's important to a great number of us. Representative McLean.
Well, first of all, I wanted to thank all of the folks from the Transportation Forum, because we were lucky enough to be invited in November to listen to some of the discussion. And also, they were doing some work on what is, how do people feel connected to transportation, and how do you sell a transportation package, and how do you sell and market the message to get a passing package? And that's where I think this connects with both of your questions, and that is that I think you agree on all the goals. I think you agree on the components of the package, and I think that with that conversation that you were having there, you were trying to figure out on the funding mechanisms and on the connections to public, what would the public stand? And that goes back to your folks' conversation on referring. And that's where I think there's still conversation for us to have with all of you, because I loved that presentation of what connected regular folks to transportation. It's not something that people actually put on the list of high values, you know, as far as some of the surveying that you did. But there are ways to connect to it, and there are ways that people feel connected to it. But I do think your report needs to respond on how much your membership really agrees on size and how your group really agrees on mechanisms, because that's where, you know, I want some more information, because that was not clear to me.
Any more questions? Senator Winters.
I just have a comment, because traveling around the state, there were some communities where I heard a lot about bikes and sidewalks. In my particular city, you know, that was the sidewalk issue. It was decided and done by my city council. And maybe in some other cities, it's decided by city council, and we actually require, you know, as time goes on, sidewalks will be throughout the city of Salem. So, you know, what I'm hearing, that the package from the state is all-encompassing. And I'd like to see some packages come out and start talking about some linkages, because not all, everything is, you know, when we look at the layers, are all in the same place. And it's also true when we look at the request and the needs that that came across the state. What was asked in the metropolitan Portland area wasn't the same totally asked that was over in some of the rural communities. And so I think this report carding that people are talking about, and I'm very sensitive to the need to often report cards come out of the metropolitan area that may not be germane to where we live, some of us in the rural area. And we're very sensitive to some of that report carding that takes place. And I don't know about some other members, but you know, some of us are. Because there's some different nuances that takes place in certain parts of the state, even though we're all anxious to become one Oregon. You know, this is the one senator who coined that for the report, because we must get there. But I'm also sensitive also to how the thought process sometimes is a little different of what we expect from the metropolitan community versus the rural community.
Thank you, Senator. I would be just tickled pink if we could wrap up by 8 o'clock. So unless there are other further questions, thank you so much for being here tonight. Thank you for your patience. Our final panel is another very important part of the stakeholder community that will be partnering with us as we move forward. And I'd like to call forward Commissioner Lykin, Commissioner Weimer, and I provide, please, if I mispronounce your name, I apologize, and Mayor Endicott. County. Welcome, gentlemen. And again, thank you for your patience this evening. We appreciate it greatly. And in any not any particular order.
Well, Mike and I were talking, and I think for the sake of brevity, we'll be very quick, and we're more than happy not to take any questions either. So.
Noted, Commissioner.
For the record, Co-Chair McEwen, Co-Chair Beyer, my name is Sid Lykin. I'm a Lane County Commissioner, and tonight, though, I'm here on my behalf as Co-Chair of the Associated Oregon County's Transportation Committee, along with my other co-chair, is Commissioner Weimer's here as well, and he asked if I would do most of the talking, but I have a funny feeling he'd like to chip in as well. You know, it was really interesting. By the way, Senator Beyer, I was really appreciative of the fact that you said you're going to hold us out in the light of day. Unlike when my grandfather was in the legislature, I think the light of day was how far they're going to pull the shade up in the bar. So anyway, really today what we really want to emphasize is, as far as the county's concerns are a few things. And first and foremost, it was interesting during the presidential election when you saw different states and how many counties they have. Illinois has over 100 counties. Iowa, 99 counties. Ohio, think about this. The Cleveland metropolitan area, there's 18 counties. Oregon is 36. Some of the counties here in the state of Oregon are larger than New England states. And in fact, if you look, and maybe from a population standpoint, it's different, but if you look at actual road miles, I think Malheur County has nearly 1,800 county road miles. Lane is second with just under 1,500. Clackamas has over 1,400. These are lane miles that we have to protect and maintain. And what's happened here is that there's been a double whammy with the counties. And that is the fact that, in fact, we just had representatives from our natural resources folks that represent the counties went back to Washington, D.C. And there's not the Secure Rural Schools is now officially gone. So we cannot expect that. We can't expect anything to, as far as something to hold things together. It's gone. And I bring that up because of the fact that the double whammy is many of the counties, especially in the southwest portion of the state, we had significant road funds from U.S. Forest Service lands that were harvested. And in Lane County in particular, that peak number was somewhere between $20 and $25 million annually. And you think about that. In fact, I remember the last really true dollars that came in based on harvest was the 1989-90 year. In Lane County alone, in 1989-90, non-indexed for inflation, was just about $21 million U.S. Forest Service land. Today's harvest, we received a nice check for $800,000. That's the reality. That's what we face. And so it's a double whammy that the counties have. And so we're here to really be very, very supportive of the legislature as you're looking at a transportation package. I mean, we represent the same constituents, and I think that that's really important to note. I think what's really key here is you have Mike on the east side, you have me on the in the Willamette Valley on the west side, but yet what we have is really the same message. We want to be supportive of you. We want to make sure that we have a robust package in place. I've heard the numbers. I will say the OTC number that I first heard, that was like, wow, okay. Well, but I think, you know, at least it's a starting point. And you look at the county needs in particular, they're and it's interesting to listen to folks talk about the metro area. Absolutely. Believe me, if we get to hear from Clackamas County, Multnomah, and Washington County, and it's congestion management. I mean, that's really a big issue. Our area, and so many different counties in the state, it's really about operation and maintenance, preservation. And like, for instance, Lane County, we represent to the coast, to the Cascades, so we don't know if we're going to have to be using snow plows or if we're going to have to be dealing with slides because of what maybe a slide that came down on a county roadway. And that is actually typical. That's just commonplace. The challenge we have is that our reserves have dwindled so much over the years that it's really challenging now to go out and maintain those issues. The other is you're going to hear from several counties, it's multimodal. That's going to be a key piece as well. And partnering with not only from the county perspective, but partnering with our cities. One of the things, when I was mayor of the city of Springfield, I always appreciated the fact that Lane County, when they received those robust road funds, would share $5 million with the cities. That meant $1.2 million alone came to the city of Springfield for operation and maintenance. We didn't have a backlog. We had no backlog at all. All of our streets were repaired, maintained, they were in great condition. That's changed dramatically, as you can imagine, because of the lack of road funds. And so today, we're looking at dollars just to preserve and maintain what we have. In fact, we don't even talk about capital anymore. Capital is not even a discussion. If it's capital, maybe it's a couple million dollars here for this, but it's really about a protection of a roadway maybe on the coast. That's a capital project now in Lane County, where it used to be capital projects were not only working in the county, but it was county engineers that did all the work for the cities to provide cooperation and collaboration, making sure those city streets were going to be built if it was a capital project. So these are some of the things that we're looking at, and I think it's important to note, Senator Bider, Representative Lightly are my representatives, and they know we've discussed this many times, and I'm absolutely there. Whatever it is they need from me, I will be supportive. And so I'm going to turn it over to Mike and see from the, because I think it's key that, you hear from the east side as well, and how important that where the commissioners are, and why the two of us coming together as representing AOC, why that's important, and hopefully our message will resonate. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Welcome, Commissioner Weimer.
Thank you. I'm Michael Weimer from Gillam County, Commissioner, and I happen to be in one of the smallest counties in the state in terms of population. And when we start counting vehicle registrations and things like that, we're sunk for as far as raising tax dollars. But we have a road department that is probably, if you want to talk accountability, they're really efficient in what they do. And I think you'll see that in other counties too. We have to make do with what we get. And this small county allotment that has been in the past is basically nothing to us now. It may be $70,000 next year. And that's pretty hard to run, you know, put together a road department, keep it going. So anyway, I've been coming to the steering committee here with AOC for, well, about 10 years now. And I think that I see the counties working together very good. The big guys and the small guys, we all see it as we're in it together. So we'll be supporting you guys and what we can do. And I appreciate the time.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you making the trip.
Co-chair McEwen, real quickly, and I think Commissioner Weimer mentioned something I think it's very important. That's the county allotment. So here just recently, we came together, and the large counties decided and really came together and said, you know what, we need to put forth a program where we're going to share those dollars, making sure that the smaller, the counties with the less population that do not receive really near enough money, what we're going to do is we're going to give up a portion of ours to make sure that the counties, especially in the east side, will receive more dollars. And so this was a something that what this is based on is going to be new revenue. And this is something that Lane, in fact, I really got to thank my colleagues in Washington County and Clackamas County in particular. They really stepped up to the plate and said, yes, we're willing to do this. So Lane, Washington, Clackamas, Marion County, Deschutes County was involved in this, and then Multnomah County has, obviously as well. We said, you know what, this is key. We're in this together, and we've got to make sure that that the counties have a strong voice moving forward.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor, welcome to our committee.
Well, thank you very much. And Co-Chair McEwen and Co-Chair Beyer and members of the committee, I want to thank you. I have some prepared remarks, but I think for the sake of brevity, I may just paraphrase and cut some of those down. Before I start, I'd like to actually compliment ODOT. I drove over the mountain today, came over the Santa Ana Pass, and I have to do a shout out for the work that ODOT is doing to keep that road open, because I mean it was tough going, but they work long and hard, and my compliments to ODOT and the maintenance that they're doing on our highways. Good evening. I'm George Endicott, Mayor of Redmond. I appear before you not only as a mayor, but also representing the League of Oregon Cities. I'm a past president and soon to be incoming president of the Oregon Mayors Association. So I've got a long history of dealing with issues at the statewide level. And certainly thank all of you for the work that you've put in on our behalf. I also want to support what we heard from the counties, and that is pledge our support and assistance and our 241 member cities to help with this transportation package and try and get something moving forward. And it is, if you look at the package that we handed out, you'll see that transportation is one of our top four priorities that we'll be discussing this session, and you got an extensive package with some of the ideas that we have. We also pledge to continue to be fully accountable for the things that we do and how we spend the funds from the State Highway Trust Fund, whether it's through the audits that we go through or any other benchmarks that you think that you need to set up. We would like to certainly support that. We'll be very diligent in how we spend those statewide dollars. Also, if you look at the transportation package, we have several concepts, and they're outlined in the package that we handed out, and I'll be very brief with some of those. But if you look, number one was, and you've heard already several times tonight, robust and go big or go home.
I want to just clarify, yes, we have two documents here.
Okay.
Is this the one you're speaking to?
That one I referenced, that one is actually my prepared remarks.
This is the one you're referencing now?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. And the problem is, of course, there's no specificity to what those really mean. And I'm not here to really lay out what those should be. But I think if you look, the bill should contain a combination of gas tax, fee increases, and other funding tools to at least meet that $300 million per year. And we would certainly defer to the OTC on some numbers that they were putting out to you a little bit earlier. And the other thing that, since this comes up so seldom, that we would also support an indexing scheme to support sustainable funding over the years. A third point is that, you know, all you have to do is look around the state and you see the deteriorating condition of our roads. And of course, to support a package like this, you know, it's that old oil commercial, pay me now or pay me later. And if we don't do some maintenance now, we're going to really have some trouble with our assets when we have to reconstruct them. We support certainly the notion this package needs to be multimodal and shows positive results. I mean, we've heard that from all the other speakers, and we also support that kind of an effort. We also would like to point out that support from the large urban areas, as well as the smaller rural communities, all need transportation options, and we certainly support what you've been hearing this evening. We also want to point out that we do want to make sure that we protect the city's authority to engage in their own transportation revenue raising. Some cities do that, and I think Eugene is the one example that comes to mind, and that maintenance of constitutional dedication of expenditures from the Highway Trust Fund maintain the 50-30-20 split to make sure that we all continue to have some funding out of the Highway Trust Fund. And then finally, of the 6 points I was making, we're always concerned about unfunded mandates, and we would ask you to please don't do that.
And heard about that recently.
So, and the other thing, of course, is we would like to see no further complexity in rules that come into an already intricate process. You also see in that letter that you have several anecdotal stories from around the state. I will not go through those, but you know, it just illustrates the need. And you, of course, heard those, as you all, when you presented your points earlier, that you heard this time and time again around the state and where all the cities sit. The other thing I'd like to point out as a sidebar here that, you know, we do pay for roads. In Redmond, I have a city population about 28,000, and every year somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million of my general fund go into road maintenance. It depends on the needs and, you know, the recession and those kinds of pressures that we have on our budget. But we pay for roads every year, all the time, out of our own funds as well as the allocations that we get. The other thing, there is a package I'm sure some of you are aware of, not all, and that's the special city allotment grants. Mm-hmm. And it's in my package in a little more detail, but we would certainly like to see that maintained and, in fact, expanded. And in fact, the board of from the League of Oregon Cities has actually supported us doubling from $500,000 to $1 million from the large cities into the small cities. So much like what you hear from the counties, we're also dedicating money out of our funds into the smaller cities to help them. And then finally, of course, you've heard about the Cascadia event. Of course, as Mayor of Redmond, many of you know that we are going to be ground zero for the recovery efforts as identified by FEMA. So I'm quite concerned about that. I have no specific request for money right now, just so you know. But when the time comes, we're all going to have to throw some skin in the game, I think, on that one. And then, of course, Highway 97, the importance of it. We talked about that when you were in Bend for the meeting, and that Highway 97 will, for some period, we don't know how long, will be the north-south corridor for the state. And so if we want to keep our economy going, we're going to certainly have to address that. So we have identified, finally, I'll wrap up here. We have identified an annual shortfall of about $217 million per year in street budgets and transportation, and capital needs of about $3.7 billion. Now, I realize that's a pretty long wish list, and certainly we can't expect that to be fulfilled overnight, or who knows, even if ever. But it just gives you some idea of the order of magnitude that we think as cities that we're looking at in terms of our budgets. And so the last point I'll make is that we feel that we're a very good steward of our share of the public transportation dollar, and will support any reasonable measures legislature may require to ensure the transparency and efficiency. And we've already heard from you tonight that you are doing that as well. So finally, we have your back. You need our help, let us know. And thank you very much for the opportunity.
Sounds like a very nice way to wrap up this evening, Mayor. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Vice Chair Beyer.
Thank you. Following the style, the bluntness of my vice chairs, let me be very blunt. The suggestion, the only monetary suggestion we've heard tonight, came from the truckers in AAA, which is a $300 million increase. I have heard from a couple of your counties, one particularly has said, at $300 million, don't even bother. What do you have to comment about that?
Uh-huh. Michael, take that one. Co-Chair McKeown, Co-Chair Beyer. You know, I listened very intently to Mr. Campbell and Mr. Russell tonight, and to kind of gauge maybe what the number would look like or not, especially if there's a potential referral. The potential package that you had put together as the Gang of Eight, we did a pretty strong analysis on that as far as the counties were concerned. And what we were looking up was really the dollars that would go in based on the 50-30-20 split, what the operation and maintenance would look like, that type of thing. We went out for a vehicle registration fee a couple years ago that went down to defeat significantly, just like the gas taxes did this last time. But we were basing it on the amount of money that would come into Lane County and on the operation and maintenance side. And it was about just under $7 million. The proposal that you had was a little bit higher than that, actually. And we were thinking, okay, you had that. The Orphan Highway is, to me, from a county perspective, that's a game winner in our view. You have Orphan Highways throughout the state, Lane County, of course.
You'd be more than willing to give them to you.
Yeah, I we're working on a lot of jurisdictional transfers. Part of that is if you look at some of those highways, they're state systems, and in Lane County, they were used for log trucks. Well, today they're recreational bicycle routes. Bikes and trucks don't do very well on the same road. And so I would say if you're looking at a package, I like the idea of over time, not one big package all at one time, but say over time. I think Mayor Endicott brought something up that I think we'd be supportive, that's indexing. But I don't think you can just come out and say, gee, we're going to do one multi-gazillion dollar package all at once. I think if we knew that there was it was something coming in on a consistent basis, and we were there to support that, that is something I think that we would be very strongly supportive. But again, AOC is not taking a position on that. I'm speaking for myself and also talking with other colleagues who are also feeling maybe in some of that same way.
Yes, very brief.
I have Senator Johnson, and then I have Vice Chair Benz. But did either of you want to comment on Senator Byer's question?
That was a county question.
Senator Johnson.
You all have mentioned the formula tonight, and I want to share an idea with you and ask your reaction to it that came from one of the meetings that I had at the behest of Representative Benz. And that was to talk about changing the formula in such a way as to reflect where gas was pumped. And I'm thinking about Seaside in the summertime when a small town swells up to 100,000. I'm thinking about Redmond, that is the recreation mecca for Central Oregon, and just wondering if any thought could be given to returning those large volumes to the place of origin for the gas sales in order to accommodate for the wear and tear on local roads that are inflicted by visitors that ostensibly are paying nothing. Hunt to the counties, George.
Co-chairs and Senator Johnson, I certainly it's never come up as a discussion. You know, if you look at volume, you know, a lot of our allocations are based on population or a formula similar to that. And in fact, I hate to totally divert, but you know, we've been thinking about the whole issue of the marijuana and how that money gets sent out based on the number of licenses that a community has or an area has. And in fact, the league we're supporting sticking with population on that one. And so, you know, I appreciate your point, but I just don't know how we, with our current systems in place and not building another bureaucracy, are able to do that.
Co-chair, Senator Johnson, if we could base that on when Chip Kelly was the head coach, then I think we could probably get there. So, yeah, that's a real possibility, especially during the fall season. So, but in all seriousness, I don't think that's something we really have really thought about or discussed. And Mike Eliason from our staff is here, and I think it's actually something at least looking at.
I didn't expect an answer particularly. I just would ask for your thoughtful reflection on the idea. It came from a constituent. I promised I'd share it in an appropriate venue, and there isn't one more appropriate than this.
Great. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Vice Chair Benz.
And I really hate to ask this as the last question, but I'm going to, anyway, keeping with my normal approach. You are all three elected officials, and you've got to go back home and explain what you're recommending to us tonight, which is, I'm thinking you're all in support of something, I don't know what the number might be, but let's use the number we heard earlier, 11 cents. That's an open thing. It's an obvious tax. Everybody's going to know about it. The low-carbon fuel standard is hidden. It's between 4 and 19 cents. And then we learned today, that there's a cap and dividend bill that may be coming, and it would be duplicative, is the word was used by Palmer Mason and others that wrote the report. That could be as much as another 4 to 19 cents. It's also hidden, though. That's a good thing, I guess, if folks are interested in not expressing this to their constituencies. We are stuck, though, trying to figure out how much we can stack on the consumer. And so my question to the three of you is, would you feel comfortable going back home and saying what I just said in front of a bunch of your constituents? And because it's not just 11 cents, is it, over time? We have to take into account these other costs. Or would you suggest we ignore them because they're hidden?
I know Gilbert County. Don't answer that one.
I think the consumer doesn't look at the tax as they look at the total cost per gallon. And right now, we're in a relative time of cheap fuel. So now's the time to move.
Co-chairs.
What he said.
Representative Benz, I would agree with that. But as far as the low-carbon fuel standards, I'm going to tell you right now, in Lane County, that's a winner, and it is. And there's and that's something that I'm that whether I would like it or not personally, I will tell you from the county person from Lane County, and if you were to pull that, it would pull very high. That's the reality.
Likewise, co-chairs and. Representative Vince. I come from a conservative area of the state, and it doesn't poll very well at all. And you all know who all of my representatives and senators are and how they feel about it. So it's hard for me to say that you can support it comprehensively. But I think that one of the things that we haven't heard of, well, I guess we did hear a little bit, but there should be a nexus between whatever we ask for. And it's just like, I think the Highway Trust Fund gets supported because it's a lockbox. And also, I hear a lot of criticism of the 9/11 fund because that money gets diverted out of the 9/11 into the general fund. So I think in terms of supporting packages that if the my voters, if they see a nexus between what we're asking for and that it's going for these specific purposes that they think it should be intended for, then we stand a lot better chance than otherwise.
Mr. Boquist.
And all three of you got questions, so this shouldn't be a surprise to you. So don't screw up the thing, County, okay? Mayor, you outlined and made mention that, you know, whatever benchmarks we put on this, I mean, the reality is, and staff over there can correct me, but I mean, it said you just made mention earlier this, we had 11 transportation-related bonds and so on and so forth on the ballot statewide. 8 went down in smoking flames. Lexington got one passed. I guess it's because it to Echo or something. The fact of the matter is the two things the city and county do have in this whole process is that accountability and referral. And those are keen. As you may mention, Mayor, if the public knows it's going to the right place, we all have an accountability problem. They just don't think ODOT shovels. They have a problem with the counties, and they have a problem with the cities. Commissioners, I get it that, you know, we're doing a good job, but the question comes back. I've asked your staff this, and I'm going to ask you in public again right here, and you don't have the list. I know that. So the takeaway is this, is that we're going to have to establish some new benchmarks or accountability standards for cities and counties, too, to convince the public to do this because they don't believe it. It's failed in your county, Commissioner. It failed in other locations in November. Several of your colleagues got sent packing in the spring because everybody's out with pitchforks, as we know, especially mm-hmm. as elected officials. And so my ask to you guys, and I've asked your staff before, is that we can set new accountability standards. We can set new benchmarks. But the cities and counties yourself ought to be able to come back to us and say, hey, here's some new accountability ideas to help convince everybody in the state that this is a good idea. So I'm not sure I need a response, but I've asked your staff for that. It's critical. It's the two pieces that you can do the most for us is keep it from being referred and make the public think it's accountable. And those are things you guys need to put your thinking cap on and get back to us with.
Okay. And we did get your email with those questions, so we know it's out there. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And co-chairs and Senator Boquist, I actually appreciated the questions. And what I have found over the years, it is much more challenging to sell roads and transportation. And I will tell you, the vehicle registration fee, the way we put this together was so similar to when we did our jail bond, and our jail bond passed with nearly 58%. We even had the audit. We had the audit built in even in the vehicle registration fee. But it's a matter of people don't believe it. Our roads are in great shape. I mean, I wish we had kind of potholes sometimes when you're doing this, but they're in such good shape that it was really hard to get people to believe that there's a real problem. So I would absolutely agree that this is going to be the biggest challenge of all. And the one thing I will say that because I was, believe it or not, Mr. Transportation on the Board of Commissioners here, I was the last holdout. I almost voted no when we referred it because the rest of our board wanted to dedicate it to nothing but operation maintenance only with no capital. And I said, wait a minute, we're in Springfield. We like to build things. And I was really disappointed in that. But I went ahead anyway just because it looks better to have a 5-0 vote. But the challenge that we had is that our roads were in good shape. And why are we passing this? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So you're right, and our staff has put together some good information. We'll get that to you, as well as AOC staff looking at the counties as a whole, and make sure you have that. Because you're right, we need to be on the same page together moving forward.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mayor Kocher.
We're done.
Have we exhausted all of our questions?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate the late evening. We appreciate you traveling up. Safe travels home. I hear there's a storm coming. Absent any other comments, we are adjourned.
See you next time.